The Economic Development Conference Committee will come to order for Monday, April 30th, 2007. Good morning, everybody. I hope you all had a good weekend. Pretty nice weather up north. We don't have targets yet, so we won't be discussing numbers in this committee yet, but I know we have a couple of issues that some people want to testify on and give us the reasons for. There's some language on the workforce development that Representative Pelosi sponsored, and maybe if you want to come up here, Representative Pelosi, and give us an explanation of this. I know some people have indicated to me that this might be controversial, and so you can explain to us why it isn't.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This amendment came at the request of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association as a result of the potential of a plan by the Department of Employment and Economic Development that would have altered our workforce service areas in Minnesota. A particular concern was the Winona area, the Duluth area, and there may have been one or two others. But the concern was that there was no local input into this plan, and this amendment would allow local input, and that's what it's about.
Mr. Chair, could you tell me where we are in the side-by-side?
I'm trying to locate that right now.
It's
R39. Okay, the language actually goes over to R40. Okay, and that's the language that's in question. And is it your intent? What is your intent here, Representative Pelosi, as far as...
Mr. Chair and members, it isn't necessarily my intent. It's the intent of the group that wanted the language sponsored. I've never been terribly possessive of bills or amendments, but as a member, I do represent constituencies, and when they have a proposal and it bears that the legislature should deal with it, I bring it forward. So their intent was that if the Department of Employment and Economic Development has a plan to reconsider the boundaries of the workforce development areas, that plan should not be put into effect unless there is local input. And local input would be the Workforce Development Center and then those entities that are served by the Workforce Development Center and what those boundaries should be and where the center should be. So this is the proposal, and that's why the amendment was offered.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Pelosi, you said this was put in here at the request of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association. Now, that's the association of the people that work at the workforce centers?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I believe it is, and there's a letter you should have in front of you right now. It probably has my name on it, but I think anyone who had a workforce development center in their area also received the same letter with their name on it when the amendment was offered. So,
Is there anybody from the department here that can comment on this?
Mr. Chair, I believe Ann Olson is here, who is the person who signed the letter. She might be the first person that you might want to bring up, and then someone from the department. But
okay. Ms. Olson, are you around?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. I'm Ann Olson, the Director of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association.
Okay, and the reason for the language?
Yes, we were informed by the Department of Employment and Economic Development that in the plan that they have to submit to the federal government for the Workforce Investment Act, that they intended to look at the way that the workforce service areas are configured. And we're just saying that if they do look at those workforce service areas, that we'd like that there to be local input before they reconfigure or make recommendations to reconfigure those areas.
And what does affected local elected officials mean?
Currently, the workforce service areas are determined by local elected officials. In most areas, they're determined by a joint powers board of county commissioners. And so we just let those county commissioners to have to sign off on any changes that are made because they're the ones that currently determine those areas.
Okay. Senator Metcalf.
Are you, I think you started your remarks with this controversy to this language, and where is that coming from?
I don't know if it's controversial. I've heard some people kind of have concerns with this. I know the department thinks that it might be unworkable, but I'm not sure if that's, it doesn't seem too controversial to me, but I would think with a one-word change, we'd probably be able to,
would you think
it is controversial? Okay, maybe it is controversial. I don't know. Let's see here. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Olson?
Yes.
This is really the, I've seen this language, I've read through it 3 or 4 times, but now that I'm looking at it, with a population of 200,000 or more, that would be approximately 25, if you divide the population of the state, that's 25 organizations or areas in the state. Because the state's 5 million, you know, they do the math. Is that what you're looking for? Is that 25 organizations come in and sit down with this? Or?
No, Representative Mahoney, currently there are 16 workforce service areas across the state of Minnesota. Some of them are organizations that are a grouping of 19 counties. Some are one particular city, and it's the way that they're configured is determined by the local elected officials. And so there are approximately 4 areas that are currently under 200,000. And so those are the areas that would be most likely for the department, we feel, to recommend having some sort of realignment.
Yeah.
And so we're just saying in this language that those local elected officials who have determined who they wish to partner with at the local area up to this point be considered and advise and consent the department as to whether or not there should be different boundaries than what are currently configured of the 16.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Ms. Olson, one of my concerns with workforce areas is actually the size and can someone get there? Can you enlighten the committee as to, are you looking to make these areas bigger, smaller? Use your district. How about his? what's your vision here?
Representative Mahoney, Representative Gunther, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther's area is currently configured with, I can't recall off the top of my head, but it's several counties in south central Minnesota that the county commissioners have determined that they'd like to work together. Representative Mahoney, currently there are 16 workforce service areas, and my understanding is that the department is interested in looking at the areas, how they're configured, and would like to reduce the number, as Representative Gunther is indicating, to fewer than what is currently in statute.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Olson, I think with the one up we have in Detroit Lakes, I think one of them isn't officially aware of it. It's a federal, what do they call it?
It's a concentrated employment program, or SEP.
Yeah.
Rural Minnesota. There are 4 concentrated employment programs across the United States that are in federal statute that are mandated under federal statute, and Rural Minnesota SEP is one of them.
And these are ones that have control over the workforce centers within that service area, and that they have made up basically of boards of county commissioners, like you mentioned, and they get all of their funding from DEED and from the Dislocated Workers Program. And I wasn't aware of this federal edict that we have going, but do we have to obey it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, my understanding is that the language that the department put in their plan to the federal government said that they intend to study the current workforce service areas. They don't make specific recommendation as to exactly what they'd be recommending, but that they want to hold listening sessions across the state. My understanding is that it would be over the summer and over the next year to look at how these workforce service areas are configured and make recommendations to changes to those workforce service areas. And any workforce service area that's currently under 200,000 by state statute could be redesignated by the department. And so we're just saying that particularly in those areas, the local elected officials who choose to make up those workforce service areas in the first place would have be consulted and consent to those changes if they were recommended by the department.
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Olson, I think you said that this legislation would affect four areas, and I believe I heard Representative Pawlowski mention Duluth and Winona. Can you tell us what the other two areas that would be affected?
I'm not certain off the top of my head if Southwest Minnesota would be affected. It's several counties that are together, but we're not sure about the population. If, regardless of the fact that it's several counties, it may not meet the population rate because there is less population. And then, you mentioned Winona, Duluth, and then the other area that would possibly be affected is escaping me at the moment.
Mr. Chair, just for clarification, the amendment before you does not affect these areas. The amendment before you would allow local input should the department want to impact these areas. So this amendment isn't saying there should be a new plan. This amendment simply says if the department comes up with a new plan, there should be local input in that plan. So that Rep. Sam Gunther or Rep. Sam Mahoney or any of the senators, if your area is affected, you should have some input in what that plan is. But this amendment isn't mandating that there be a plan or a change. It's quite the opposite, that there should be local input.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Sparks, the other area that we were concerned that may be affected under the 200,000 population is Stearns-Fenton, which is currently its own workforce service area of two counties.
And does any of this redesignation have anything to do with the employees at the workforce centers, or who staffs them, or there's something on R31 about employees, and I'm just wondering if that has anything to do with it.
Mr. Chair, this isn't directly related to that, no. The local workforce service areas, under the direction of the workforce investment boards, which are appointed by the local elected officials. So that's a bit of a step back to where what we're talking about now.
Those are the county commissioners.
I'm sorry?
Those are the county commissioners.
In most cases, county commissioners, correct. Except in the areas where it's one city and then it's the mayor of that city.
So these local elected officials aren't included, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. County commissioners and city officials. Okay. But in regard to your question, it's not directly related to that issue, although the local workforce investment boards and the local service areas do determine where the workforce centers are located. But the department does have some input because there are state staff at the in the local workforce service areas. And the language that you were referring to actually refers to the state staff that are partners in the local workforce service areas, and not directly under the jurisdiction of the Workforce Investment Board.
Okay. Any other questions of these witnesses? Can Paul, do you want to?
Mr. Chairman, Paul Moe, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Employment and Economic Development. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the language. I think it was our intent to gather the input from our local elected officials and other stakeholders as we move through this process. I think it's been some time since we've evaluated kind of the workforce service area of delivery of services and boundaries and so forth, and we just want to take this opportunity to visit with all of those affected as we move through these decisions and get their input. To the extent we're supportive of the language, I think it's fine. I think we want to do this in a very collegial way and find out what the best way to deliver employment and training services are. The only comment I would have, Mr. Chairman, is in terms of not conflicting with any federal requirement that we might have. Federal requirements provide that we have to do this, I think, periodically and work with our partners and stakeholders on this issue. To the extent that we do this and not conflict with any either mandates or requirements from the federal side, we want to do this.
Except comment on the language.
If I haven't looked at the federal requirements. The term
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. In terms of the term consent, as long as it doesn't conflict with any federal requirement.
Do we know if it does?
Yes, it does.
Can you say your name for the record?
I'm Bonnie Alces, the Director of Workforce Development Division for the Department. I think it's important to note, first of all, that the current configuration is a result of, in 1985, the Job Training Partnership Act, and at that time there were 12 WSAs. And then the Department was petitioned by Stearns, Benton, Winona County, City of Duluth, and then on the other, there used to be an East Metro WSA, which now has been broken up into four, Washington County, Ramsey County, Anoka County, and Dakota County. And what we are trying to do here, the federal regulation says that if any area, geographic area with a population over 500,000 is automatically designated. But one of the things that asks is, and so is concentrated employment program, that's rural Minnesota step here in Minnesota. One of the things that we are supposed to do in creating these workforce service areas is to look at the alignment with educational institutions across the state, the alignment with labor force issues, commuting patterns, and one of the things that we really want to do is say, have things changed since 1985? We have areas that, you know, we used to talk about the seven-county metro area. We have areas now that are around the metro area all the way on I-94 corridor that are becoming a big part of the labor force similar to the metropolitan area, and yet they're aligned with counties that are very rural agriculture counties. And we want to go out and listen and talk to WSA and talk to the local elected officials, talk to the educational institutions, the economic developers in the area, and say, what would make the most sense on the alignment where your regional economies are more similar? And that's what we're trying to do. And by putting the word consent, there are local elected officials, like, for example, Winona County, they may not consent, but they have a hard time financially making it as just a one-county WSA with a very small population. We are not looking to make a very, very few WSAs. We are looking at what makes sense. Oh, there was a study done by Gillespie, the state demographer, and Stenson, and they talk about the ruralplexes and the metroplex, if you're familiar with that study, but we're trying to build very strong regional economies, invest the money in services to people versus having, every workforce service area has to have a workforce investment board. And we would like to have planning boards that are more regional.
Madam Chair, or Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I don't know who's in charge.
One of the
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, just an observation. The date on your letter is April 11th, which would have been approximately, I think, the date of the Finance Committee. You just heard the department say that they're open to meet. This is the first time I've met with them at the table on this language. They've had a couple of weeks to meet with me if they would have wanted to have met with me on this language. Again, I didn't hear from the department that this would be forbidden. I don't think under federal law you're forbidden from having public input. If that's something new, maybe we should have the statute where you can't meet with the public.
The only thing that we're concerned about is we definitely want to listen, but we are concerned about the word consent in the language.
I didn't hear it.
What?
I don't understand how the word consent conflicts with federal law.
Because right now we have the authority to automatically redesignate any area under 200,000 population. And that would say that if we've listened and we have heard from all of the people, and the only one that is against it is the local elected official in that area, we could not do it.
Representative Rucavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think it jeopardizes any financing. Government. But to this point, you know, Representative Pawlowski and I and others started hearing about, you know, supposedly some concerns that were developing out there and not hearing anything from the department. And so we put this in the bill, I believe, in Finance Committee, if I'm not mistaken, Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rucavina, I made that point that the letter is dated this before April 11th. That's got to be the approximate date when the amendment was done, and this is the first meeting I've had with the department at the table right now.
I have been contacted by you know, my workforce service area of districts too, and they were all elected, and I mean, all concerned. And members, that's just the point here. I mean, you could do a little better at public relations over at HEAT and at, mm-hmm. at some of the other agencies. That's what started all of the whole thing with Representative Mahoney's and which too regarding you know, plumbing codes and everything else. I mean, you get out there and just say, this is what we're going to do, and then after there's a political brouhaha, then you come back and say, oh, by the way, yeah, we were going to consult with people, but it didn't start out that way, and that's what this language is here for, and I think it's good language. I would hope that we would that the Senate and Mr. Chair, that you could get a couple of your members to support us on keep it in the bill.
Well,
I know your persuasive nature.
Well, the paragraph before that almost makes it look like you still have to have, while you have to consult local elected officials, they still can have other petitions that appear to have an effect on what happens. And so this language doesn't seem to be bad language. I mean, if you're just working with mayors and county commissioners, I would think that this would not be real difficult to do. We won't act on it right now, but let's. Does anybody have any more comments or any questions on this? Or do you have any more comments from here?
Mr. Chairman, no, I don't.
Mr. Moe.
I have one comment, Mr. Chair, and it's just that the local workforce service areas know from when the very first time I told them that we were going to be looking at this that we were going to have public meetings. It was always the intent. It didn't come after this was put into the language. I think it's very important to know it was always our intent to consult with people in the local areas.
Does the federal budget have anything to do with any kind of consolidation in this area?
We were cut to $2.5 million this year.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney?
You were cut this year. What were you cut from? From 2.6 or 3.6 or?
Well, it comes in different funding streams. Like the adult program was cut from about 12 to 11 million. The dislocated worker program was cut. They're all, none of these budgets statewide are over like $12 million. So it's a pretty substantial cut. It's about a 10% cut.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Maybe at either now or at a later time, you could just give us an aggregate of all those cuts, whether it was $1 million or $20 million.
Yes, I can do that.
When is the beginning of the program year? Is it July 1st?
It's always July 1st.
July 1st, okay. So have the redesignations already been made this year?
No, and we would not consider them before July 1st of 2008.
Okay. All right. Okay, any further comments? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Representative, do you have any final comments?
Last comment, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This language comes about as a direct result of the Workforce Development Center's contacting us, and this is my first contact with the department. So if that's any indication of how things are going, the language is probably needed.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Members, since we don't have any budgets yet, or targets as such, I was just wondering if maybe a way to proceed here would be to adopt the same as that we have in the bill. And I think it looks like the first one is on R33. I don't know if we should go have a motion to just adopt all the sames, because I don't know if all the sames are non-controversial. We might not want to adopt them all. Okay. So, let me see if we've got... On R33, there are two sames, which I don't... Sections 4 and 5 of the House and Sections 36 and 37 of the Senate. Does anybody have any comments or questions on those? Not Representative Murphy would move that we adopt the sames on R33, Section 4 and 5 of the House, and Section 36 and 37 of the Senate. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. On R34, that doesn't look very controversial. Are there any?
Chairman, on R34.
R34.
Yeah, we can't move on that one this morning. That's the redevelopment account, and for 20 years it's always been 50-50.
Oh wait, no, I don't know. That's not the one. Are you on R34, page R34?
Yeah, those, then you get up to R35. Last one, Governor Ventura switched that formula around because he was going to get the Metro Council to do that 50%, but it never ever happened.
Yeah,
it's been 50-50 for 25
years. I think you're looking at the language on R35, aren't you?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so the language on... Go ahead, Representative Regina.
Yeah, I think we're just looking at...
Section 6, and that's in Section 7.
But, Mr. Chair, for Senator Metzen's information, right now it's zero.
Your bill,
do you go to
50%? Mr. Chair,
but it's only zero because of the mistake that the governor made, and the Met Council never followed up on it. It was never meant to be zero. It was meant to be 50-50 if the Metro Council would find somebody somewhere else, but they never, ever did.
Well, Mr. Chair,
to
that, just
to hang on. Calm down. Council got some. Hang on a second.
But I just wanted to comment to that point. The mistake was you people in the metro area voted for Jesse Ventura. We did. That was the mistake, and you have to suffer for it.
Okay,
we bring you back slowly to reality.
Wait a minute. Hang on a second.
It wasn't quite all the metro area.
It wasn't South St. Paul.
It wasn't the east side of St. Paul either.
That lost total control here. Okay, Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chair, page 34 doesn't have anything to do with the redevelopment. R34 is a continuation of the contaminated site cleanup and development grant account, which just manipulated the language a little bit. Both sides are exactly the same on the two pages before, just regarding the consideration of current market value versus cost cleanup in deciding priorities. So this is not the redevelopment. This is contaminated site cleanup.
Okay. So
and it's exactly the same language.
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair, it's almost exactly the same language. The House says not limited to, and the Senate says but not limiting it to.
Oh,
so you can decide on which first tense you'd like. Otherwise, it's the same.
House language.
The
House language is closer to Rangers in the Senate.
All right. Then Representative Rookarino moves the House language, which is almost exactly the same as the Senate language, on R34. Representative or Senator Metzen, this doesn't have anything to do with what you were talking about, and we won't do that just yet because I think we're really close to getting that one right. So. What you want it. Okay, so all in favor of the House language on R34, lines 25.28 and lines 25.9, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. Next same is section 9, R36. Which is actually on R37. I don't think there's anything on 36 that's the same, is it? Right. So the only new part is on R37, right?
Right.
Well, we don't have to do old language.
Well, that's good.
So, somebody give us a quick explanation of that. Who's got that one? Baker, Ms. Newman?
It's
the Minnesota State Office shall serve as the state's office of protocol providing assistance to official business. But, okay, that's non-controversial. So, Senator Sparks will move the language on R37. It's section Section 9 of the House and Section 41 of the Senate. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion adopted. On R38, Representative Mahoney, do you have any? That's the same, right? Okay, we're not going to do that one.
Mr. Chair, the language on section on page R38, section 12, in the House version, and section 42 in the Senate version, that would be the lines from in the House 29.26 to 30.27. In the House bill, and 34.5 to 35.27 are identical, and I would move that we adopt those.
And Representative Mahoney will move those. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Vote
aye.
Adopted. R39. Section 13 in the House and Section 43 in the Senate. Any discussion on that?
Well, which section are we, Mr. Chair, which section are we on?
R39, Section 13 in the House and Section 43 in the Senate. Those are same.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Mahoney.
Could we put off adopting that at the present time, and is there some conversations about that?
I haven't heard any, but if you want to put it off, we will.
Yeah, no, quick, please.
Do you want to put it off too, Senator Cook?
Absolutely. I would like to put that off.
All right.
We need a little more clarification on that.
All right. R40. On R40.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can somebody give us an opinion on Mr. Jensen? Does Section 15 and Section 44, does it need funding in order for it before we adopt the language, or is it?
Mr. Chairman, members, on R40, the House Section 15 and the Senate Section 44 is the same. It puts a cap on interest rates that the initiative board can charge. They both do the same thing.
And so it has nothing to do with any kind of funding, right?
No, not state or appropriation funding. No, it does not. It's just loans that the initiative board makes.
Okay. So Representative Murphy will move Section 15 in the House and Section 44 of the Senate be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Let's go to R51. Section 28. 27 and 28 in the House, and Sections 52 and 53 in the Senate. Is there any discussion or comments on those? Any concerns?
Yeah.
Senator Metzen moves the same as on Sections 27, 28 of the House, and Section 52 and 53 of the Senate now be adopted. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion adopted. Next is on R50. Oops, did I miss R52? What happened here? Oh, R52. Okay, R52, Voc Rehab, and Sections 29 and 30 of the House, and Sections 54 and 55 of the Senate are the same. Did you say no?
They are the
same. Is there any questions or comments on that?
I move.
Representative Murphy will move.
Adoption
of sections 27 and, wait.
29 and 30, 54 and 55.
Of the House in sections 54 and 55 of the Senate be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion adopted. R 56.
59. Mr. Chair, we have got an incorrect topic on this one. It's safe patient handling rather than bulk rehab.
On R 56.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't do.
Are they the same or the others?
They're similar.
One is definitive, okay. One's a study.
Okay, so that's we'll hold up on that one. Prevailing wage is the same. I think we're going to hold off on that one. The plumbing board's the same. I think we'll hold off on the plumbing board also.
Mr. Chair, on the plumbing and high pressure boards.
Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so the committee knows that all those boards that are in 2089
mm-hmm.
Have been in negotiations, and they pretty much closed out their negotiations. There's some final verbiage that they're doing this morning. Next meeting, we should have it in an amendment that we can put right in here. And
so you're okay with holding off on this, right?
I would prefer that we hold off for a little while.
Okay. I think the prevailing wage has been is okay, but I'm not sure about that. Just the R98. The which language on R98 is the same?
98. Okay.
As well as on R99 is the same. Representative Murphy, would you move R98 and R99? Wait, no, R98 is the same. R99 is similar.
80.28 to 81.17 on the House, and lines 48.17 to 49.5 in the Senate.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Polk.
Just to this article, this is where we're removing. Are we removing some members from the IRRB board?
This is where the board's going from 13 members to 10. We're removing the citizen members on this.
May I ask? Can I get a little background on why we're removing the citizen members?
Well,
like citizens.
mostly because the board are all elected members, and they have a real lot to do with appropriating money at the IRRB. The citizen members aren't elected officials. That's one of the reasons. Another reason is that the board has never had elected officials on it. And it's not elected officials on it, until 1999. And there were some negotiations, and I think it was probably in this committee right here, where they had some negotiations to do something or other to allow three citizen members to be appointed. One's appointed by the governor, one's appointed by the Senate Majority Leader, and one's appointed by the House, Speaker of the House. Just the very makeup of how they get appointed is rather political, if you want to know the truth. And we're trying to eliminate that. But and some of the members who have actually served as citizen members suggested that we do this because they didn't think that they had the input. They had input that was necessary, and plus they didn't feel that they were actually necessary to be on the board. So we've been taking some input from some people who actually served on the board that who said that the citizens don't need to be there. So, Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's always good to have a little variety and everything. And I remember there's a time that Representative Murphy was there. She heard a very good job of adding to the board, the wisdom of the board.
I heard someone told me it was the
ICP
priest
on this. Remember, she was an elected
citizen.
She was an elected official, though, I remember.
Well, we represent citizens. They elect us. I think it's only fair that we listen to them wherever possible and to have common people that has the wisdom enough to elect you and me should be included. I agree.
Well, suggesting that theory, we should have the governor appoint some people to the legislature also that he would like to serve as a member of the House of Representatives or a member of the Senate. It's very similar. Because we definitely listen to. But we'll hold off on this for now. Okay. All right. The next one is a similar, I believe.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Newman?
This is technically a similar, but the difference is the House language is all one sentence. And we use a which, and the Senate language is two sentences that uses a that. And that's the difference in the language. So.
You know, somebody told me that whenever there's a that in a sentence, you don't need it.
No, Mr. Chair, no.
True?
It's the other way around. Usually that replaces which. Which is used too much. I said the House language on the other one. But a shorter sentence is always better also.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the Senate language.
You're caving again.
I feel a little bit like English 101, but the Senate per sentence, I don't think it's a complete sentence.
Mm-hmm. That's true, Mr. Chair. Now that I'm reading it more closely.
Representative Gunther moves the House language on R99. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. Rick Avino will be happy about that, too, by the way.
Thanks, Anita.
Let's see here. R105.
We'll find one
for you.
So, that's can come out and witches got to stay. No, I shouldn't say witches. Wait. Anyway, all right. R105.
No, that's for tomorrow. This is for tomorrow, too, or for the later meeting.
The electrical licensing?
May as well do it all at one fell swoop.
So save this
tomorrow would be just fine.
Okay.
Part of that deal.
Let's see here.
121.
Mr. Chair, I move my 96.27 to 96.30 House and lines 18.20 to 1824 Senate.
Okay, any discussion on subdivision 5 on R121 of the House and subdivision 5? How many times does that happen? Where we're the same subdivision. Subdivision 5 on R21 of the Senate. Any discussion? Representative Murphy moves that be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. And R132.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I move on family rental housing. Lines 106.9 to 106.21, and on the Senate, lines 74.27 to 75.5 be adopted.
On the Murphy motion, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion is adopted. And are there... Ms. Newman, are there any similars that are so similar that we could adopt them also that you are aware of?
I'm a fever.
A fever.
Mr. Chairman, I think the final one there on R133 is the change in language to the challenge grant program. The only difference there is that the order of preference is must in the House and shall in the Senate. So I assume that this would be one where the Senate should win.
So shall should be used with I and we, and must should be used with all the rest, right? So is this an I or a we, or this is...
Yeah, this is among comparable proposals, preference must be given. So.
Okay, so must is the correct word.
I move adoption of line 7, Senate language 75.6 to 75.24.
75.15 to 75.19, right? Mm-hmm.
19?
Huh? Or no, the whole section 85, is that? Okay, the whole section 85, that's what we'll move.
75.6 to 75.24.
You got it right, I got
that
it wrong.
That was my motion.
All right. My ears are not functioning there. Representative Murphy moves the Senate language on... page R133, section 85. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Ms. Baker, did you?
No, sorry.
Okay. Are there any other similars that are similar?
Well, all right, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I think, what? Well, I think the House Council and I agree it should be the House language that's moved here, not the Senate language, right?
Did we get that backwards?
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
So we want
moved.
We want, no, we want must. And it's, yeah, it's
so
not that
want,
big a deal, but.
Okay. Do we have to reconsider that? Or should we do this?
You can tell us.
Okay. Representative Murphy moves to reconsider the motion by which Section 85 of the Senate was adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Adopted. Oh. Now Representative Murphy moves.
What about the shell on 107.22?
It's been taken out. Oh, wait. 107.22. That's not part of this motion.
It would be on line 106.32. The House has must.
So we're moving right now the House language section 5, right, on R133. Okay, Representative Murphy moves the House language on R133 of section 5 to be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion adopted.
That's what I meant all along, Mr. Chair.
I knew that. And, okay. Is there anything else that people want?
Any
input on here?
Anyone from the martial arts?
Is there anybody from the martial arts here? Do you want to talk to them?
He wants to say something.
Why don't you? You want to testify? Why don't you come up?
Can counsel tell us what pages we're talking about? The martial arts and the boxing board?
That's House language, so I'm not quite sure exactly.
Mr. Chairman and members, on page R88, R89, we talk about tough person boxing and the license fee schedule starts there.
Okay. Tell us your name for the record and then tell us what you want us to know.
Okay, my name is Andy Grahn.
What is it?
Andy Grahn, G-R-A-H-N. I'm from the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy in Brooklyn Center. I'm the program director. Chairman Tomasini, Representative Murphy.
Sony.
We would like to.
Tomasoni.
There's a David Tomasini in Hibbing, and he gets my phone calls all the time. He's doing a really good job because I keep getting reelected. But anyway, go ahead. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
We would just like to. Remove the language regarding mixed martial arts under the Boxing Commission. We feel that they're two separate sports, and we would definitely be in strong favor of some sort of state-sanctioned commission regarding mixed martial arts, but the Boxing Commission, we don't feel currently has the knowledge or the people to oversee mixed martial arts competition in the state of Minnesota.
I don't have any strong feelings.
Representative Mahoney, well, there are some House members that have strong feelings on why it was put in, and it was put in committee.
It was put in committee.
Representative Mahoney, Representative Gunther, you want to tell us about it?
Representative Mahoney, Representative Gunther.
I'm going to ask the question of the testifier.
Okay.
Well, Mike.
Go ahead, Representative Gunther.
My recollection is this is one way that we could have oversight over mixed martial arts and make sure that the fight, the bouts are fair and matched, and that there is a safety factor as well as the appropriate medical personnel there at the ring. And there again, I love the fact that this testifier is here, because I'd like to know what you have in place right now, and maybe you have something better.
Mr. Grove.
Well, I think that there, in some cases, some of the promoters, some of the events are done fairly and safely. In fact, probably the majority, just on their own, because they're looking to keep things consistent with how things are done in the rest of the country. And there's the majority, or a number of states now that are sanctioning it. So right now there is a group of people locally who are comprised of coaches and fighters and promoters who are trying to organize themselves to create an independent sanctioning body. And that's going to happen beginning May 3rd, this Thursday, at a show here in town. But again, I think that it will eventually need some state form of oversight. But the question is whether or not the Boxing Commission can do it, and whether or not we need a state athletic commission, which is how it's done in other states.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right now, I know the function of any boxing board, regardless what state it is to ensure that someone that is a shining star doesn't fight somebody that is a pug. And we certainly, don't know in mixed martial arts that is the case without having some kind of a sanctioning board to oversee them. And we don't know that they have the appropriate medical personnel there to help with an injured fighter. And that's probably why you were put in here, because they thought you didn't have that. If you have that, I certainly would entertain taking it out. But when you can prove you have that, I'll certainly listen to you.
Mr. Grant.
We do in the majority of cases have that. But this is hard for me, because I do believe that there needs to be legislation. Like, again, it's just my concern is whether or not the Boxing Commission can do it. There's, you know, 30 events a year going on, professional mixed martial arts in the state of Minnesota. It looks like to me last year there were about 6 professional boxing events, so there's a larger number of events. There's a whole different set of rules and regulations and stuff that comes along with it, and the people that are in charge of the boxing know about boxing. It's a little bit as if you had hockey referees and hockey officials come and try to oversee soccer, say. So, you know, I do want everything that the Boxing Commission can do. I'm just not sure that it can do it properly.
Let me ask this. The language talks about tough guy, tough person contests. And we're talking mixed martial arts. Are they the same?
No, they're different.
Okay. So, is mixed martial arts, is that regulated in a different area? Oh, here's mixed martial arts here. Okay, that's the second one. And you're concerned about the mixed martial arts, not about the tough person one, right?
About, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, there it is.
Maybe we should have a top person come too.
Well, they apparently don't mind this. But
well, thank you, Chair Thomas.
Okay. Go ahead.
You didn't catch it, so that's okay. I'm probably better off.
I did miss it.
My question for the testifier is, you stated that you're going to have a meeting this Thursday, a third or fourth, whatever date it may be. I'm going to ask a couple of questions and then you can follow through with them. The reason for that meeting, was it this legislation? What are they trying to do in their particular meeting? I mean, are they trying to set up a similar board, board of boxing, board of martial, mixed martial arts? And when would they have a set of criteria for these bouts?
It definitely is a result of the legislation last year establishing the Boxing Commission, and then this year with bringing mixed martial arts under it. There's a whole network of gyms, promoters, and combatants all throughout the state, and what some of the people that are involved in what they want to do is create a independent body that's involved with all of the local gyms to oversee it and make sure that it's done fair and safe. Which most, like I said, most of the events are already done with medical personnel and good referees and fair matchmaking, but not all. And what we want to do is sort of create a body of people that will enforce that. And so we've met a few times and decided that this event on Thursday that's going on is actually an event where people are going to compete in mixed martial arts. It'll be the first test case where we're going to try to put people from all the different schools in place to be almost fulfilling the same positions that inspectors would in other states.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Mahoney.
We do need, it would be good for the committee and for this legislature to have an idea of what's going on in terms of tough person regulation in other states. And we can certainly have staff find some of that out. You could certainly pass that along to us. I think maybe you are getting the drift that we're a little concerned. It's not so much the ones that you've talked about that are being self-regulated with medical personnel and matching up. But if we don't have something in law, something underneath the Boxing Commission or some other commission, you could actually put myself against, you know, a national champion, and you know they're going to wipe the canvas with me. Believe me.
Yeah, I mean,
and I don't think you're trying to do that. I think, from the sound of it, you've got a pretty respectable sport that you're trying to bring forth and entertain people and bring foster competition. So I hope you understand when at least myself and I think a couple, few of my colleagues are going to not vote for your. And work against taking that out at this time. But I'll tell you this right now. I know that I will work with you. I'm sure Representative Gunther will work with you. And I'm sure there's a couple of senators that would work with you to bring that forth next year. If you bring us reasonable regulations for your particular sport, we don't have a, I don't want to say a dog in the fight, but we don't have any real vested interest other than the citizen safety, and that's all we're trying to get to.
Well,
how do we get to that this year between now and the time you have your particular regulations ready? Can you answer that particular question?
Well, definitely I agree 100%. I want to have some sort of state oversight with mixed martial arts competition. I have looked at the Boxing Commission legislation and what's currently law in the state of Minnesota regarding the Boxing Commission and compared it to other states and felt that there was enough difference between how mixed martial arts is done in other states and how the Boxing Commission law is in place now that I didn't think that it could be done this session, so I agree. I think we should get it done next session.
Is your concern that being under the Boxing Commission, that you won't be treated fairly?
Yes.
And Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe, and I agree, there's a difference between mixed martial arts and boxing. Certainly mixed martial arts and tough man contests. I really believe if you could act very quickly with your organization and come up with an amendment that would add perhaps a member of your board to the boxing board and make sure that you have the appropriate referees in your matches, that maybe you could coexist for a year with a little bit of help.
I think there's been some concern that's already been proposed to the Boxing Commission. There's just a concern because there's so many events going on in the state of Minnesota already. The amount of time commitment that would be involved in a mixed martial arts committee is a little bit more probably than what the Boxing Commission is doing now. And it's just a matter of figuring out the logistics of who can handle the responsibility.
How are these guys governed right now?
For the boxing board?
No, the mixed martial arts. How are you governed? How are you?
In most states, it's typically an athletic commission, which sanctions both boxing and mixed martial arts. Yeah. And there's usually about a 5-member committee and an appointed commissioner.
But Minnesota, we don't do it that way.
We don't have anything for mixed martial arts right now.
So you have
a boxing commission, that's a 5-member committee with an appointed commissioner.
And they're overseeing the mixed martial arts also?
No.
No?
No.
So nobody oversees you?
The promoters do.
And?
The people who put on the events decide what matches and rules and referees.
Representative Murphy.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Grun, if someone went to your Thursday event and had some complaint to make, who would they make that complaint to?
They'd have to go to the promoter right now.
To the promoter of the event.
Actually, at this, beginning with this event, I think that this alliance of local people is going to be in place, and they'll be able to take that up with them. But
where is this? Mr. Chair, Mr. Grun, where is this event on Thursday, and what time? And
it's at the Myth Nightclub in Maplewood.
Myth?
The Myth Nightclub in Maplewood, Minnesota.
At what time?
7:30.
7:30 p.m.?
Yeah.
Are we going?
No, maybe we should.
Maplewood, huh? Yeah. Myth Nightclub. Okay. So what if someone got hurt and wanted to come to the state? There would be no one in the state to come to unless we have some language in here that at least they would be able to say something to the boxing board. As it is now, they just sue?
Well, it's the rate of injury is actually pretty low because the referees are pretty good, and usually the combatants are pretty well trained. But if they do get injured, like if they need stitches or whatever, right now it's on their own health insurance or out of their own pocket. And that's something that we're working with the promoters to make sure that they do get event insurance. And that's also one of the things that needs to be in place, like in the law.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Grun, does the promoter have them sign a release or something if they come into this event at nightclub?
Yeah, typically they have to sign a contract because they're being paid to fight as well. That releases the promoter and the nightclub, I think, of liability. But again, the rate of injury, you know, counterintuitively is actually pretty low. I mean, intuitively you would think that people get injured all the time severely, but the referees and the combatants are fairly well trained.
And Mr. Grun, if they get paid, is that enough to cover their injury?
Well, I couldn't say for sure because, again, the rate of injury is pretty low, and I think that most of the competitors do have their own health insurance. So if they end up with needing any kind of medical care, they go to the emergency room on their own.
And most of the competitors have other jobs?
Yeah, they're not. 100% of them are semi-professional. They work during the day and then do this as a side thing. So.
Well,
thank you.
You two guys handle this, okay?
Don't fight it,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think I've got my commissioner of martial arts, mixed martial arts, in view here. So you know, you have to be careful when you come to the Capitol what you wish for.
We have to do that now. I have one more little thing here. I think maybe we can deal with. If I can find it.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Okay, thank you very much. And deal with these two guys, and they'll figure out if we can do something or not here.
Talk to Ms. Gossett before you leave, too.
Who can help me on... I need some housing language in regard to disabled veterans and persons with disabilities. It's in the House, but it's not in the Senate. I think it's non-controversial language, but if we can get a page in reference to it. I've got...
Mr. Chairman, is that on page R133, the preferences for public housing?
Yes.
No. Wait. Yes, it is. Section six.
Section six was.
I don't think that's controversial.
That was Representative Medora's bill. She felt that disabled veterans should be included in the and other persons with disabilities in the priority list for public housing, run by HRA.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Beaver, could you? I think. Online, in the House language, it's page 107.15. It says, receiving assistance under Chapter 256J. Could you tell me what 256J is? I can look it up, but...
I think it's the current program of financial assistance that replaced aid to families with dependent children.
Okay.
Right.
And the Minnesota Family Investment Program.
Okay.
It's just a change in the reference to, it was obsolete, the reference to families with dependent children.
Representative Gunther. Representative Gunther, you're going to vote yes here in a second, okay? Just to make sure, okay. All right. Senator Metzen then moves the House language, Section 6 on page R133. Any discussion? Seeing none, all of his favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion is adopted. Does anybody else have anything they want to discuss right now or before we recess here? You are going into session at 12:30,
That's
right?
That's correct.
And we are going into session at 1. I think we're going to have to recess to the call of the chair. It depends on how long session goes. If we don't end too late, then we can potentially just meet about a half hour after the last body adjourns. Otherwise, if we realize that there's something going on in either one of the bodies that we can come back in here, we'll make some kind of an announcement, but I can't really tell you right now. So for right now, plan on a half hour after the last body adjourns, and if it changes, we'll figure something out. So the committee is in recess.
And there are 35 martial arts events per year and approximately 6 to 10 boxing events per year, the way my understanding is. And I thought that because of the number of people that are going to have to pay for license fees and fights during from the martial arts point of view, they should have a firm place at the table with four members, and we'll look at how it works out later, and I think this is a fair way of looking at it, and I recommend you adopt it.
Let's see.
We have an amendment being passed out, I believe.
Copy of that amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, then, is the Boxing Commission okay with this?
I did not get a hold of them. I've been in the House floor, and I think from the point standpoint of fairness, if there's anybody from the boxing board who'd love to testify, I'd love to hear you. You take the bigger number of events, they pay from the same fee schedule. I think the boxing board has a majority on the board, plus an executive director named Scott Ledoux that's not on the board. So I think this is fairness.
Representative Regina.
Will the same fee structure, did you say, apply to the martial arts too?
I would imagine so, sir.
Do you have, is there an estimated revenue, income revenue?
Estimated revenue generated from this, from the fee schedule the boxers have?
$20,000 a year. By adding the martial arts?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the fiscal note on the fee schedule included martial arts before because they were going to be right under the original House position. What this does is add members to the board to reflect that martial arts will now be also under the supervision of the Boxing Commission.
Originally. Yeah. are there any, Senator Metzen?
I think we got a little time on this one. I think we ought to talk to the Boxing Commission and see how this fits in. And I do think we need control or something. I don't know if I'm ready tonight to... Because Mr. Ledoux already had some good points about his stuff and this stuff and some others, and I think we should get a brief...
Is there anybody from the Boxing Commission here? I don't see anybody jumping up.
I don't want to belabor this particular point, but as I remember the Boxing Commission, we've already funded them, I think it's $50,000 this year, and that's what I remember, and they were supposed to be martial arts and mixed, whatever they are, was supposed to be regulated by the Boxing Commission already. I think that's as we phrased it in our legislation. So I, if you want to put it off, that's fine, but I don't think it's a... and we probably do need to talk to them, but we do need to do something with the mixed and tough guy, tough person thoughts.
Chairman, I think this goes further than the martial arts side. This is the ultimate boxing stuff where they... somebody should be looking at this stuff, but I don't think that's... I don't believe it's the same as martial arts.
No, it is.
This is the ultimate thing where, if you ever seen it, I don't know how long you can watch it, but you know, I happen to turn it off. It is really brutal. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in my life, but I think somebody should be looking at it. And we get one shot at it, let's look at it for another day.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thursday night.
Madam, 7:30. The whole committee.
The floor.
I heard the headliner is me and Governor
Puente. Oh, let's see who has that on.
There'll be leg rest.
Thank you.
Anyway, hang on.
I think
Gunther.
Senator Messman has a good point, and I agree with him about you know, some of these fights are very vicious, and I don't think Representative Rocavina should be allowed to see him.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. I wondered if Representative Gunther had spoken to Mr. Grun. I mean, I think Mr. Grun, if I'm correct, his point was they really didn't want to be included in here, and there's concern because these things are happening. I missed somewhere along the way why we didn't have boxing for a number of years. Did we actually preclude there being boxing? I know that we did away with the board, but we didn't have matches in Minnesota, I thought. And how come we have this stuff if there's no authorization for it?
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shai, you're right. There wasn't a boxing board. We used Iowa's. The boxing board, Minnesota, sanctioned Minnesota fights was from Iowa. And they no longer could afford a board either because there were so few sanctioned boxing matches. But now, maybe we should call this board in the future something completely different. I can't remember what the man used, but the
Athletic Commission
that would sanction all these venues. And I think that would be much more appropriate, and we wouldn't have mixed martial artists that fight six times more than boxers do. Six times more sanctioned fights than boxers are with mixed martial arts. And I think they're going to pay the vast majority of the fees, in my opinion. And I think, and I honor Senator Mitchell's request to have the boxing board give us their blessing or opinion or something. But I think whenever this committee feels comfortable in voting for or against this amendment, it's fine with me.
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Metzen's point about including tough man competitions, we do include that on the House side on page R, on page R 88, 73.27 and 74.1. Our tenant staff takes stuff that way. Just so, I mean, and we agree with you.
Okay, yeah, thank you. See some language now.
So do you, go ahead, Representative
Mr.
Murphy.
Mr. Chair, in response to Representative Chai's comment, Representative, or Senator, she came in when I did.
I know.
we were representatives then. Representative Gunther and Ms. Nauman and Mr.
Ron
did talk after the meeting, and that's how this came about.
Are we feeling more comfortable over here?
Right. It's not an urgency strike.
I think it's my bill. Yeah. What's my bill, I guess? I'm going to pay a little more attention.
So do you still want to wait? Or
why don't we wait at that day? We something's got to get done. We all need a bit, Mr. Chairman, and we need some language, but I'm not quite there yet for me.
I think the good news of this, though, is that we're keeping them a part of the Boxing Commission, just adding some membership to it, whereas they don't even want to be a part of the Boxing Commission, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I think the Boxing Commission is okay with them being a part of the Boxing Commission, right?
There's the one that brought it up.
So, all right, if you're not comfortable voting on it today, we'll see if we can get somebody from the Boxing Commission to either weigh in on this or come and testify and let us know what they think. And
you know what Scott will do after our day.
Well, as long as you can run, you're okay. He told me he's not a very fast runner anymore, so maybe you can get away from him. Go ahead.
Who's going to contact?
Cap will get a hold of him. Okay. Okay, so we'll lay the 850 aside. Just for the audience's information, we did get targets today, and the numbers, I'll read them off. If you got a pencil, write them down, but it's probably not significant to the audience as much as it is to the members, but the base budget for the conference committee for 2008 and 2009 will be $252,548,000, and that'll be the same in 2010 and 2011. And the ongoing money for 08 and 09 is $35,294,000 and $40,084,000 for 10 and 11. We now have one-time money, so that number is $86,923,000,000, and the compensation adjustment was agreed to at 3%, and that number is $2.9 million in 08 and 09, and $3.9 million in 10 and 11. And the two numbers that are not flexible, I think, in those four numbers that I just read off, are the base budget and the compensation adjustment, and I think we can move those numbers right now and get those things done with. And then I want to take some testimony on a couple other little things, and then I'm planning on recessing for dinner and maybe coming back around 7 or so and see if we can maybe put some numbers together and agree on some things. So I think, Representative Murphy, do you feel comfortable in moving the base budget and the compensation adjustment?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then Representative Murphy moves the base budget and the economic development compensation budget adjustment. Any discussion?
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Did the Senate hit for compensation 3.25?
Senate had 3.25 and the House had 2. And so this is a 3% number.
Got it. Pretty tight. Pretty tight over there. 2%.
Mr. Chair, all the committees are getting 3%.
Yeah. It's good compromise.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Representative Rukavina, did you want to go back to any of the sames? I don't know. IRRRB thing in regards to the membership, which is the same in both places.
Sure, I'll just move the entire house plan with plastic. Unless you have an additional correction.
I do have an additional correction. Why don't you move that for me also? What page is that?
Mr. Chair, this is R98.
R98?
R98.
Okay. Okay, then Representative Rukavina will move the same as on Section 1 of the House and Section 56 of the Senate. We discussed that earlier today. That's the membership. Is there any further comments on that?
Did we move sections 2 and section 57 on 99?
Yeah, we did those. Well, I think we'll take that as one motion. Is there any further discussion on that?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do you mind if I make my own motion, or are you?
Representative Rukavina, if you want to make your own motion, go ahead.
Well, that's okay.
All those in favor of the adopting the same on Section 1 of the House and Section 56 of the Senate on page R98, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion adopted. You have an amendment there for me, Representative Rukavina?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. And I would move that on page R100. I would move the section 3 and 4 with the exception that I would offer the A19 amendment.
Yeah, I'll wait till the amendment comes up. Members, what he's just moved is money that is in the IRRRB. It's not general fund money, and so it's money that is at the agency. Doesn't have any effect on the general fund. And the amendment was in our original bill that we passed out of the Economic Development Committee in the Senate. And so this is for quite a bit less money, but it helps finish off the Moonlight Graham Field of Dreams in Chisholm, which they have put about $250,000 in-kind money in already. And so this helps finish off the field. So this is also IRRRB money. It's not state money, so you don't have to worry about that. Okay.
Do we have money, Mr. Chairman? What kind of money do we have for this? I see you name projects. Is that kind of normal?
Does
the board do it later? Or apparently, we're doing it here. Right?
We're doing it here. Yeah, we're doing it here. But it's actually coming out of the agency's budget. Okay.
How come we didn't have any language?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Chai.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't understand that.
Spreadsheet, Mr.
Chairman. I don't know.
I don't, there probably isn't on the spreadsheet, but it's not general fund money.
Senator Chai?
Chairman, are these. Maybe you just said so to Senator Metzen, but I don't understand. Is this money that's ordinarily voted on by the IRRRB?
It could be.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid,
we have done this in the past with appropriations in state statutes instead of you know, doing it as the board. We've had some trouble with an argument over whether you know, public works projects. These are, one is for a Action Economic Development Project for Aiken. The other one is to save the synagogue, that's the second oldest synagogue in the state. There's three projects in that 150 for Iron Range Youth in Action, which some CDBG money and local money is being used for. And, Mr. Chair, I see where there's that lines 83.8 through 83.11. I should probably... I don't know if that should be in this motion or not.
Yeah, it probably shouldn't be.
Shouldn't,
yeah, probably.
So I would remove those lines and add, and then offer this amendment and move the rest of the language there in section 3.
Mr. Chairman, that was the part I liked.
Well, we're going to do that, but okay. Maybe not in this motion, because that is not the same pot of money.
But it's, oh, it isn't. Okay.
Okay, so that's a different pot of money.
Okay.
Okay.
No, that's state general fund money there, but...
So probably what we should do first...
The rest of it's just taconite tax dollars.
Let's do the A-19 amendment first.
That's why I'm removing it, because it is general fund money.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, how do you want it to...
Well, let's move the A-19 amendment. That'll add it in, and then we can move to Section 3 after that. Representative Murphy.
So will this be like, on the spreadsheet, page 9... like line 423.5?
Actually, we've got this on a page in a line, and it's in the actual bill. So it won't be on the spreadsheet, but it's in the actual bill. It matches up in the actual bill. So if you add it to the spreadsheet later, it would probably be line 424, and it's going to move to 4. Okay, so all in favor of the...
Wait a minute.
Ooh.
Mr. Chair, excuse me.
Okay.
Matt, Mr. Chair.
Oh. Representative Murphy, yeah.
Representative Murphy, there is no... The reason why there's no IRRRD, because there's no general fund, other than the fact there's the pass-through money that goes to... of occupation tax that goes to Carlson and Coochin County, which are not in a... Tacony Leaf area, and then there's that 120 grand that I'm going to eliminate that was put on the house floor. Nice little WCHA fee that they're sending it in.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh,
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Center shut.
Mr. Chairman, is it Representative Rukavina's intent then to continue to keep that $120,000 from the state general fund? Because I was pretty excited when I thought it was coming from your local money, you know, your IRRRD money. But
well, Matt, Mr. Chair, Senator Shai, I was going to call you Representative.
See, I'm not insulted.
Yeah, I know you wouldn't. And actually, there's another senator over there, too. What happened on the House floor is you let us match our Taconite money with our own money again, which I don't think is fair. And that is part. This $120,000 you see was deducted from the appropriation we had in the bill for the 21st Century Mineral Fund in our bill. So I am removing that because it's general fund money, and then everything would be Taconite dollars, which are local tax dollars, and no general fund implications.
And Senator Shai, we did an appropriation last year that is Taconite tax money that is going to the same purpose, and so we do have about an $80,000 appropriation annually for the next 5 years. Okay, so on the A-19 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. So Representative Rukavina then moves...
I would move, Mr. Chair, Section 3 and 4 minus lines 80, as amendment,
minus lines 83.8 through 83.11.
Okay. any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion is adopted. I think we have...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have a couple of amendments. Do you want them before dinner break, after dinner break?
Are they... are they the plumbing stuff?
No, these are bioscience related. Shouldn't be real controversial. Just taking a few minutes to explain them.
Go ahead. Is it money involved or is it just language?
Pardon?
Is it money involved or just
nope,
language?
No, just language.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll have the page pass out the 856 amendment. Mr. Chair and members, there is a part in the bill. There is a $3 million appropriation in the second year for bio businesses it's an incubator business initiative, and it requires that the Department of Deed get outside experts, and what we're trying to do is allow outside and deal with trade secrets. So we're requiring that those outside experts that come in and join with Deed to do evaluation of this particular program and these trade secrets, that they do not disclose them and are required to sign non-disclosure forms. Pretty standard stuff in the industry. We just don't want to take any, if this thing passes, we just don't want any eyes to not be crossed. So there you go. I said it correctly. And it's just language. It's in same language that was put in a grant program in the tax bill.
Is there any discussion?
I think it's a very appropriate thing to do. We keep the integrity of these companies in place.
Okay. Does anybody need to testify on this or make any comments on the A56 amendment?
Ms. Chen.
Who we have to ask?
Ms. Chen. Ms. Chen, no, I mean, this isn't exactly the same thing as the bioprocess piping, but it's similar.
No,
but it's similar in terms of the principle of it.
Okay.
And so I think it's important that we do this. I think
on the 856 amendment, then, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion is adopted. You have another one?
This one is, yes, I have the A51 amendment. It concerns biozones and the designation of biozones. The state now has three of them, one in St. Paul, one in Minneapolis, and one in Rochester. One of the small problems that we had was we really had no fixed criteria. And in our bill, in the House bill, we told the department to come up with fixed criteria. Because the last time they sent out for applications without criteria, they had a small town with a creamery that actually managed to meet all the criteria and become a so anyhow, we don't want that to happen. If we're going to create a biozone, we would have to have it follow some decent criteria: education, transportation, proximity. So what I'm trying to do is to not have the department be required, as the law does right now, to dictate more of them. So, Mr. Chair and members, I would have to ask that we adopt the, assume the Senate language on R25, which it doesn't have any language to match up to the House, so that the A51 amendment could be put in. And what that does is require the Department of Deed to come up with criteria and not designate any more biozones until they have come up with criteria. And that's what it does. I can stand for questions.
And did you say there's three zones already?
There are three zones at this time.
And
there are in my opinion, only a couple, three more places in the state that are ready to have them, but they don't have any criteria to meet to say that, you know, these are the criteria that we should be. Proximity to an institution of higher learning, close to a freeway or a highway, so there's transportation, contiguous landmass to put one of these zones into, because you don't want to have them in a dozen different places for some town or some city. And you want to have, I've indicated to the department that I'd like to see them figure out a way to finance some of this stuff, but they haven't been so forthcoming on that part of it.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rakina.
Representative Mahoney. The law as it was proposed a few years ago, I remember when these came through, Representative Magnus, I think, was the author, wasn't it?
And Peterson, last year.
Well, anyway, well, this was a few years back, but what you're doing is basically then restricting it, and the limits that you put on, here's what I'm concerned. The University of Minnesota just got awarded that FEMA grant, and I don't know if that classifies, it's probably not biotechnology or health science. It's more like nanotechnology, if you want to call it that, where they're shooting those photons. They got awarded that last week, I think. And they're going to have an underground facility up in the Ash River Trail that catches these photons if they veer off from the Sedan Underground Mine, where it goes through a baseball-sized building filled with mineral oil. I want to go there swimming, but anyway, you know. But, I mean, would that prohibit them from doing anything connected to biotechnology in that research facility that's up there in the Sedan Underground Mine, and where they're getting this these projects from the federal government?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukabina. At this time, what this would preclude is the Department of Deed saying that you could put a sign up that says you are a biotechnology zone. It wouldn't hinder any kind of experiment they want to do, any kind of investment that a town or a person wishes to do. It just does not allow them to be declared a biozone. One of our biggest fears, or one of my biggest fears in the departments also, was that there's any number of cities are now star cities. And when that system started out, it was supposed to be a special designation. And it's a little less of a special designation now than it was intended to be. And if we're going to do these, I'm more than comfortable having this, as soon as they come up with criteria, that tightens it up a little bit so that a farm town with a creamery can't be declared a biozone. I'm more than comfortable putting it out there for as many that actually meet the criteria.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, I don't know which line it is, but isn't there, in our bill we have money for an ongoing program, and I think it's in biotechnology in Worthington?
Yes.
And I think, is it a half or $600,000 or a half million?
It's $500,000.
But anyhow, I'm worried that does this then, even though it's just about their designation now, if there would be state funding through deed for that, where they would qualify, does this then, because they're not a biotechnology zone anymore, if we designate just three, that it would preclude them from getting state grants if we do this?
It should not. I mean, they are not awarding any more biozones until they come up with criteria at this particular time. They've put a hold on them. They've got 47 applications sitting on a desk somewhere. This just codifies in law that they can't do it until that particular time is which they've come up with their criteria. And Representative Rukabina and members of the committee, I don't think there's anyone that would be more happy to see 10 or 15 biozones in this state than me. And I would love to have them mean something rather than just a note in the book. And I'm hoping that BEAD comes back next year. But if they don't, there's no reason to put a variety of cities with biozones that don't have anything to do with biotechnology of any sort. I can name 20 or 25 cities that are trying to put biotechnology into their economic mix. They need to step up a little bit higher than just having the one company. And that's what we're trying to get to here, is to step up their the criteria and not do something on the fly. But if there's uncomfortableness with this, we can talk and I can withdraw the amendment. And
let's do that for now and just...
Certainly.
I'm not exactly sure I understand it myself. Are the 47 applications that they've got already, would they have to be redone? I mean, would they have to reapply?
I would hope so.
Let's talk about this a little bit. Sure. Okay. All right. Okay, you'll withdraw the... So Representative Mahoney withdraws the 51 amendment.
At this time.
There's members on R37 and R38. There's some House language on workforce development intermediaries. I don't think it's controversial. Somebody take a look at it and tell me if they think it is. Ms. Thomas, why don't you just come up real quick and give us a quick understanding of this and explain it to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the conference committee, on page R37 and R38 on the House side, sections 10 and 11, would do two things to the Pathways Grant Program that is overseen by the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Board. It would expand the allowable applicants for those grants, adding workforce development intermediaries to be applicants and creating a definition for that in Section 10. And the second thing it would do is reduce the employer match from 1-to-1 to 1/2-to-1 in the Pathways Grant Program. And as a reminder to members of the conference committee, the Pathways Grant Program is focused on low-income workers, people who have incomes under 200% of poverty. And this grant program has been underutilized over the past few years, and a number of people have looked into ways to make it more accessible so that it will be used to train low-income workers. And these actually were both based on recommendations from the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and the Job Skills Partnership Board has reviewed them, BEAD staff have reviewed them, the Workforce Council Association, MNSU. I don't know of any opposition.
Any further discussion? Gunther moves.
I'll move that then.
Representative Gunther moves the House language then on R37, R38, sections 10 and 11. Any comments from the Senate side? Seeing none, all in favor of the Gunther motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. Let's see. Is anybody here from BEAD that would like to talk to us a little bit about the Minnesota Investment Fund? Mr. Moe. I know the governor had some money in the his original recommendation. The Senate came out with zero, and the House had $10,000. Tell us about this a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Paul Moe, Department of Employment and Economic Development. Thank you. The governor had recommended $7 million, one-time money, to recapitalize the Minnesota Investment Fund program, a program that had been around and has been around for several years in the department. A significant and centerpiece development financing tool that we partner with local units of government. And we disperse loans and grants through that program to small and medium-sized businesses that are expanding and providing jobs and investing in their local communities. One of the significant elements of the program is when projects are funded, 20% of the repayment comes back to the local unit of government for further economic development activity. 80% now comes back to the state and revolving fund that we then disperse out again for additional projects. We are averaging about one new job for every $5,000 that is being invested in state money for this program. Historically, we're getting 4 to 5 times private leverage for each dollar that we are contributing. Each project enters a business subsidy agreement that identifies wage goals, job goals, and capital investment. Our default rate has been less than 3% historically under the program. This program was funded at fairly consistently through the 90s at $5.5 million per year. In 2003, it was significantly cut to something like $2 million, and in 2006-07, it was zeroed out. 2008, and then 2008 for this fiscal year, we were suggesting a $7 million one-time appropriation to capitalize it.
And how big are the grants normally? Are these loans? Are these loans?
Mr. Chairman, we enter into a grant agreement with the local unit of government. Then the local unit of government enters into a loan agreement with the project in terms of a loan agreement with repayment terms primarily. They average between $250,000 and $350,000. Some are smaller, some are larger. The statute limits any one investment or any one project to be no more than $1 million.
Okay. Representative Regina.
Mr. Moll, what happens is that the fund has to be capitalized again when it's a loan program? Is it just bad loans eventually? Or what was the reason? I mean, you would think that revolving loan, it would be coming back.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, over a period of time, as loans are dispersed back into the system, if you will, into the projects, and with the diminishing amount of money available, we're getting about $1 million a year that comes back to the state from previous projects. There's a significant portion that's still at the local unit of government. It's just a matter of recapitalizing a fund that has seen some success.
So, Mr. Chair, is the $1 million then just reinvested again? It's loaned out again to different loan projects and local units of government?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lutheran, yes, that gets revolved back into the projects, right.
And, Mr. Moore, is it my understanding that $3 million of this was dedicated for Thompson West expansion?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Why did they qualify for so much when everybody else could only get $1 million?
Mr. Chairman, the significance of that project with the number of jobs and the wages they paid and the capital investment warranted a significant investment from that fund. And we would need language change to exceed $1 million. That's correct.
And isn't there some kind of incentive in the Senate tax bill to handle Thompson West?
Mr. Chairman, I understand. There was also a proposal in the tax bill that would allow sales tax exemptions for construction materials on the on that project as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Regina.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Moll, where is the language that would be needed to, are you going to have that offered up here by someone as an amendment?
Mr. Moll.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Regina, if it's not there, I'll look into it. I thought it was there. Maybe it's not. I'm sorry.
Is the language, Mr. Jensen, is the language in the bill, in our House bill, or where would the language be? I know we, Mr. Chair, members, we kept $10,000 as a placeholder for the Minnesota Investment Fund because you came to us, the Senate had zeroed you out, and you asked to be able to make your case, which I kept that $10,000 in there, but this is the first I've ever heard that we needed to change the program to accommodate you for the constant there.
Mr. Chairman, members, the $3 million was in the governor's bill as a language set aside of the $7 million.
And, Mr. Jensen, was the language that changed the program, or was it specific to Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, it was specific for, the definition was specific for the Thompson project.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the House language has the exception to the limit already in it.
When we put the $10,000, then we put that.
The exception to the limit is in there.
Does it specify Thompson?
No.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Moore, would you go back and explain the cuts and then the zeroing out parts for me in the history, when you were giving the history?
Mr. Moe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, the program was funded fairly consistently through the all through the 90s at about $5.5 million per year. By 2003, with the budget constraints and so forth, it was significantly reduced. I think the number was like down to $2 million for that year. And then, again, in 06, 07, it was cut to zero. So it's been several years since we've been at the $5 to $5.5 million appropriation level.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Moe, why in 06, 07 was it zeroed out?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, budget priorities and other initiatives just didn't allow us to have resources for that program at that time.
And then, Mr. Chairman, what happened in the interim that created the need for, or the persuaded the governor to go back and include it again?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, our economic development partners have come to us and said there's a demand for development activity with this type of program, and the budget is such that it allows us the opportunity to recapitalize the program at this time.
And do you have a history of where these, geographically in the state, where these $5,000 jobs were created?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, I'd be happy to share with you my location, every project. Yes.
And Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. Gunther, Representative Gunther, do you have any memory of this, of the zeroing out, and then what happened?
And now I have memories. I have nightmares.
Just thought here I had some flash and burn bombs.
You know, 35% per year. We looked at that. We had federal money. I believe that's gone, or going. If it's not gone, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, it's been reduced but not gone. We get about $3.3 million per year in the federal for the same type of activity.
Okay, and at the time we thought that would have to be sufficient. A lot of us wanted it to keep it, and I was one of them, and I would very much like to see it come back. I think the city of St. Paul has a pending use for some of that money. I think Cambridge does. There's cities and uses that could be used to enhance job production, and I might want to add on that wages paid by the Minnesota Investment Fund projects have an average of over $14 an hour. In my district and your district, that's a lot of money. Maybe in the metro area it's not, but that's even just about what a legislator gets paid.
Maybe more.
I'm not talking overtime.
Representative.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Moe, why was $7 million the number for this year?
Mr. Moe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, I think in the matter of all the initiatives that we had and the resources available, that $7 million was the appropriate number.
And Mr. Chairman, what indications do you have that the four, if we did $7 million, that the $4 million would be quickly spoken for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, we're confident that we would be able to expend the $4 million in a year or so.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Moe, maybe $8 million would have been better.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, the governor recommended $7 million.
And Mr. Jensen, what's the history on the revolving?
But did the governor,
excuse me, hang
Mr.
on.
Chairman, Mr. Moe, did the governor decide on that amount, or did a staff person?
Mr. Moe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, I support the governor's budget of $7 million.
Did that well.
Representative Murphy, Mr. Jensen has...
I know, I heard your answer, Mr. Moe.
No,
sometimes I support things to that.
Staff people do?
Are in the House bill. Or the Senate bill.
Mr. Jensen.
I'll move the Senate bill.
Hang a minute. Mr. Jensen has a little bit of history on the revolving loan fund.
Mr. Chairman, members, it wasn't always a revolving loan fund. The revolving loan part came into play in the state fiscal year 05, I think, where money started coming back. And as the money came back, then it was seen as a way to cut all of the general fund money out of that to save for the budget purposes.
Representative Moe, did you have a comment?
Just a quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Moore, the House language exempts the whole $7 million from the $1 million requirement. Those of us in greater Minnesota who you know have benefited from this program in the past, Beltran and Cass County, both along the lines of Representative Murphy's question, what reassurance will we have that we'll, after that $3 million is plunked down in one project, maybe that won't expand to four or five, and the rest of this money will get out to greater Minnesota?
Mr. Moe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe would be happy to talk about language that would preclude us from any other project for your company.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
I'm going to throw a softball here. Mr. Moe has been very good at moving money around to the more rural areas.
You're going to throw that one you got in your hand?
Pardon?
You're going to throw that one you got in your hand? Or?
No, I'm trying to repair some of the arthritis and stuff. and as such, in some of the bioscience grants, it was a full 50-50 split, and he brought that to my office when I asked him to come in and explain what they are doing with that. I think they've done a reasonable job, and it certainly is something that we need to look at with Thompson West. It's a significant project for the metro area, creating multiple numbers of jobs, and it's been a long time employer here in town, although under a different name. So I certainly hope we can figure out some way to make this come back, this loan fund come back.
Okay. Any further questions of Mr. Moe? Okay. Thank you very much. We'll figure this. Oh, maybe while you're here. Why don't you comment on the use of funds for unemployed worker assistance? Page R31. You know about that one? I think that's the use of the Wagner Pazer funds.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, I've asked Bonnie Elser to join me at the table. She might be answer the questions in more detail than I can, so I have her comment on that.
Ms. Elsley.
Yes, I am Bonnie Elsie and Director of the Workforce Development Division. The Wagner-Pizer Fund, the purpose of the fund is to provide a labor exchange between business and job seekers. I mean, that's the purpose of it. And in order to do that, you need to have staff working in our workforce centers that deal with the job seekers, and you need to have staff that are out visiting businesses that understand, because they visit businesses, what the job requirements are and can bring those job openings back to the workforce center. We have spent considerable resources in training these staff over the last couple of years. And right now we are at a 35-65 split. We have 65% of our staff are in the workforce centers doing job seeker services, and 35% are out visiting businesses. These staff also are actually located in the workforce center. If this particular amendment were to be passed, we would have to lay off 15 staff. Now, what I consider what happened there is our job orders last year increased 125%. Since 15 staff is about 33% of our business service staff, we would have to expect that the number of visits that we made to businesses and the number of job orders would go down corresponding to the percentage of less staff we had out there trying to get the job openings. those particular staff visited 5,914 businesses, and which resulted in over 9,000 requests for either recruitment assistance and giving us job orders or helping us link up with education like Minnesota State College and universities, our community college campuses, and also working on retention issues of how to better recruit and keep qualified workers. The business service staff also coordinate their work with the Department of Labor and Industry. They work with employers on apprenticeship programs. We're trying to expand the use of apprenticeship programs in Minnesota because we know a lot of workers do not have the ability to take a year or two off their working in order to go to school. An apprenticeship is a good opportunity for people to get trained while they're on the job. And so we believe that any restriction of putting a number in the bill would inhibit our ability to do our job as we see fit when it comes to how many staff does it take to visit businesses. We have them strategically located across the state. And obviously most of the businesses are in the metropolitan area, but we can't preclude having a considerable number of business staff in the rural area because the geography is so large that somebody would be driving all day in order to work with businesses. So we feel it's important to have that number of staff in greater Minnesota also.
Is the problem you're referencing that at least 75%
yes.
employee, and that's the inflexible
right.
part that...
That, like I said, that would result right now in us laying off 15 staff. Laying those staff off would cause bumping. If you know how state civil service works, it would cost our department considerable amount of money if a person laid off decided they didn't want to be demoted because these are higher level jobs than our job seekers' jobs, and they would have to, they could choose not to be demoted and bump the least senior person in the state, and that person then could bump somebody else, and we have to pay relocation expenses when those situations occur. So we could actually result in laying off more people than necessary just to pay for the relocation expenses.
Mr. Chair, this initiative came from me. I don't know if I think Representative Gunther was sympathetic to my initial concern, and that was that I wanted more live bodies in the in your offices out there. I don't care if they're in Hennepin County or here. I don't understand where there'd be any layoffs because they would just be working with the unemployed and underemployed as opposed to visiting businesses. And my understanding is your staff have gotten way more heavily oriented towards business and not the unemployed workers. Now, I realize that you've been cut with general fund dollars from the state, that you've been cut on a federal level, but, you know, this whole, when somebody's traumatized by the loss of a job or has a very poor job, they like to see a human being, mm-hmm. at least, you know, most of the people I do, rather than talk to a voice activated, whatever, you know, you get in these phone conversations. I tried to cancel my mother's phone at AT&T the other day, members, and I'm waiting for when the call center stuff comes up because I have just a great story there. But, you know, after 20 minutes, I think my mother, who has Parkinson's and can't even handle the phone, would have hung up after about the first minute. And that was what I was trying to get to here, is live bodies. And also, you know, you are the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and the employment part of it seems to have been somewhat tossed to the side. So maybe you can explain to me how rearranging those Wagner-Pizer employees would result in layoffs, because I don't understand if they go
okay.
towards the employee side. Instead
because
of the
they're Representative Rippodina, because they are a different job classification, that means that they can't just stay in their same job classification and do different work. That would be a demotion. Anytime there is a demotion, it really is a layoff. So they have an opportunity to stay at that job classification at the higher wage. And so in order to do that, they have to bump a least senior staff within the state. And it's
can I? So, in other words, right now, you told me in my office that this Wagner-Pfizer is split 50-50 between workers. And
no, it's right now, it is 35% business service staff and 65% job seeker service staff. And this bill, at the federal level, has been in existence since 1933. And we used to be more at a 50-50 split, but with all the cuts that have happened since 1980, we haven't had business service staff out in the field in a long time, and our job orders were going down. Without job openings, we can't help job seekers. And a lot of jobs are in the hidden job market, and we're trying to go out there and find them so that we can refer the people that walk into our office to jobs.
Mr. Chair, did I misunderstand? So the people that work with the unemployed or underemployed Minnesotans get paid a different job classification?
Yes, yes.
Than the people that call on the businesses?
Yes. And that's done by...
What's the rationale behind that?
That's done by our State Department of Employee Relations, and they have what they call the HAY system. And they look at the job skills that are needed to do a specific job. And there's lots more consultation with business. There's the sales skills. You know, they went through the HAY study ratings and came up with that. That is not something that we just automatically decide. That is something that goes through a formal process under state civil service.
I'd like to see the study there, Mr. Chairman.
She can probably give
we
it
won't
to
have
you.
A Department of Employee Relations to worry about that anymore.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Brokers-Mean is right. I do feel sorry for a dislocated worker that has to make a phone call, sit on the phone for 25 minutes, and not get a real person he can talk to, and I always did dislike that. And they put a gag order in everybody in the workforce center, you cannot talk to anybody about unemployment. I thought that was totally un-Minnesotan. And I still do. However, I do really believe also in the productivity of these people that go to these businesses and say, hey, we have some people that want to work. You need some people. Let us fill your orders. And they are very productive. And you know, where we don't have people, when you walk in there and you say, I want a job, they don't have people right there. They point at a computer. These people are going out to these businesses, have a list of people to do it. And I think the system is working better. It is serving not only the unemployed person who has a chance of getting a good job at 80% or so of the job they left in a very short period of time. I think this is a program that is pull part. They're pulling jobs out of employers so employees that are looking for jobs can have them. I think it's very necessary. And I remember having the argument with Senator Anderson saying that the client, the customer, is the business. And he says, no, the customer is the person looking for a job. Regardless how you look at it, you need both. And I think by listening to the statistics, I think you can see this is paying off. However, I totally agree with Representative Rocavina. If someone comes in looking for help for unemployment, don't tell them the phone number. Give them a little help first.
What's this about the gag order?
Well, they had in workforce centers they were not supposed to help people that were looking for ways to get unemployment benefits. You had to call a phone company. In our area, they called Rochester. And they talked, and for some people, technology is not their thing. Representative Rocavina and I have the same kind of constituents, because we really, when we first changed, I really got it. It might save the department a little money, but it caused me a lot more grief, and I don't think the message got through to all, so maybe we didn't save as much money as we thought.
Okay. Any further comments on this? It's okay with, well, it has to be. We're going to take a break for dinner. Let's come back about 7:30. And I don't know how late we'll go. It all depends if we can get to any numbers or any more language here. But I think we'll break now until let's stay till 7:30 so everybody can go get something to eat. So that meeting is in recess. The patient handling equipment that we have in the bill. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Carrie Mortrud, M-O-R-T-R-U-D, with the Minnesota Nurses Association. And I did have staff pass out a letter. So there's a letter that goes through and talks about the differences.
Members, it looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
First, I want to make sure to thank both the House and the Senate for including the language. We feel this is really important to keep the workforce safe in order to keep them in the workforce, taking care of patients and keeping themselves safe and the patients. As the bill moved through, the Senate moved a little faster, and there were quite a few changes that did happen that were the result of negotiations between affected and interested parties, and so that's what the letter describes as those differences. Do you want me to go ahead and go through?
Why don't you go through them so we know?
Yeah. Okay. The first one, letter A, to address some concerns from the clinics in Minnesota, we statutorily removed them from the definition section, and I'm on Article 3, and it's on page R74.
Carrie, one second. No, is this in the House language, or is it...
47.
Is this in the House language, or is this what we are agreeing, have agreed to, and we're going to have an amendment coming up on?
Nope. Is all the letter lays out what's in the House language.
Okay, all right.
And that's bolded.
Okay.
So I included most of the paragraph, but then just bolded the difference.
Okay.
So I apologize. On page
R47.
So Article 3, Section 23, Subdivision 2, the definition of healthcare facility, we removed the clinic definition, but inserted outpatient surgical center because there is a lot of patient listing going on there, and that was our main concern to get that covered. On the next page, I organized this by topic, so it jumps around from section to section, so I apologize for that, but it has to do with what was addressed in those areas. So then on page R56, Article 3, Section 38, regarding the work group. The Minnesota State Council on Disability offered to convene a work group to address some of the concerns that the clinics brought forward. So we laid those out there. Then letter B, to address some financial concerns from the Hospital Association, Care Providers of Minnesota, and Minnesota Health and Housing Alliance, we developed some hardship language. And then also language that would clarify what we were looking for from the commissioner regarding the workers' compensation insurance. And what we wanted to see was that the work comp rates for facilities that participated, that their premiums would go down. So Article 3, Section 24, Subdivision 7, the grant program on R48. The bolded section just talks about the hardship waiver and gives those facilities that have evidence of hardship until July of 2012 to comply. Then Article 3, Section 37 on page R56. In the bold, it just talks about that we want the work compensation premiums of healthcare and long-term care facilities for that to be recognized when facilities participate and then see their work injuries go down. On the next page, Article 3, Section 37, R56, asks the commissioner to make recommendations to the legislature regarding additional funding sources. We know that there's other funding sources out there, but we were unable to secure those for legislation this year, but we know there are other ways that facilities could find money to purchase equipment. In letter C, to address the Hospital Association concern regarding many facilities that actually have already begun this process, we have had a lot of success at the Alina facilities and some at Fairview, and so to recognize those that have already started, in Article 3, Section 24, Subdivision 3, there was just a few words that were deleted, and that was at the recommendation of House research staff that suggested we just remove that. And then finally, in D, is the appropriation that we received in the House. And those are the differences.
Is there any questions? Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mrs. Mortude. And I know that I'm generally supportive of your language. I know that I represented or presented Senator Higgins' bill in front of Senator Tomasoni's bill. But I did have some inquiries from local people, and I think maybe other senators and representatives may have as well. Under this current language, are dentists included in this provision?
We removed all clinics, the definition of clinics. So that was one of the concerns. We had a meeting after that committee hearing with the Minnesota Medical Association and a multitude of other lobbyists that worked with the clinics representing them, and the dentists were represented there. And then what resulted was that we removed them and hope that we can get together in that work group to figure out what the barriers are to, you know, having any equipment at dentist offices or any kind of other offices
okay.
that are around. So.
Thank you, Richard.
Senator Cope.
Same question.
The appropriation, would that be for the hardship places that wouldn't have enough money to buy the equipment on their own? The $1 million. Is that for everybody who has to buy it, or is it?
We didn't feel as the Nurses Association that we would be the ones to necessarily determine who and how that should go out. So the language does specify how the grant money can be given out. And there is currently in the Department of Labor and Industry a process for grants. And we were going to amend the current grant program for OSHA that dealt with this. But at the recommendation of the commissioner of DALI, he said it would be much easier to just do a grant program specifically for this rather than go through rules and change the current grant program. So we started this grant program, and it is to be doled out to those who need it as necessary. And we just didn't feel like we should be the ones to determine that, but that should be between the industry and the commissioner to decide who and how that gets divided. I don't know if that answered your question, Senator.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if that Article 3, Section 24, where you have the hardship language there, is a hardship case to be given first consideration on this? Is that what's intended, or?
Yes, we would think that would be. In the negotiations, some of the facilities, such as the Alinas that have already participated in this, are well on their way and recognize that they're not going to be at the top of the list to get them. But we wanted to make sure that we paid attention to some of the smaller hospitals and long-term care centers that might not be able to purchase the equipment right off the bat, and that they should be the first ones to get it.
Okay. Any other questions or clarifications? Is the we have some similar language on a study on I-56. Is there preference to either one of those study languages? Do they just say the same thing and have some that's and which is that we can move? Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and members, the health language contains the extra directive that the commissioner has to make the recommendations to the legislature regarding other funding sources that might be available to these grants. Otherwise, the study provisions are quite similar. The health language just has a few more words.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Newman, do you know what section 182.6553 is?
Mr. Chair, that... Mr. Chair, I will have to check to make sure, but I believe that is in the determination of work comp insurance premiums. Or no, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. That's the new coded language for this safe patient handling program.
Okay. All right. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this? Mr. Rakowski, you want to testify on this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Rakowski with the Department of Labor and Industry. I would prefer, if I could, to get a copy from Carrie of the changes that she's proposing in this letter so that I could respond back to you more thoroughly.
Did I misunderstand it? Didn't you say this is all language that's in the House bill?
Correct.
Okay, so, and are you proposing changes to the House bill?
No.
No. So you've seen all the language, or if you've read it, you've seen.
No, actually, Ben, in that case, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to reiterate the department's, concern about the source of the funding, which we've discussed.
And do you have a alternative suggestion? Is that above your pay scale right now?
Mr. Chairman, I did think of some things over the weekend. I haven't discussed those with folks of other pay scales.
Can you let us know tomorrow?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Did you want to say something? Okay.
Where is that number? It's on page
56. Yeah.
Workers' compensation fund, is that correct?
That's where the $1 million is coming from, yeah. I think that's in the House bill in that form, yeah. Mr. Rakowski, can you let
Eddie
testify? Okay, go ahead. Say your name for the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Conference Committee. My name is Lori Marsha. I'm with the Minnesota Health and Housing Alliance. I represent over 200 not-for-profit providers of older adult services, nursing facilities, assisted living, and the like. And especially in light of the comments about the source of the funding, I just want to draw your attention to a letter you should all have in your packet that does outline some of the concerns the nursing facility community does have about this language. I have to say that we absolutely support, let me underscore, we support the goals of the Safe Patient Handling Bill. There's nothing more important than the safety of our residents and also the safety of the dedicated caregivers who work in nursing homes. But I'm here testifying in opposition to the language should the appropriation not follow the policy. And that opposition is out of financial desperation, for lack of another term. As many of you know, nursing facilities are in somewhat of a financial crisis right now. The most recent financial indicator study shows that one-third of all nursing homes in the state of Minnesota are at risk of closure because their operating margins are negative 5% or worse. The most recent national study conducted by BDO Seidman shows that Minnesota nursing facility rates are $20 per resident per day below the actual cost of providing care. That puts us in the worst 10 states in the nation. With those sorts of financial numbers, it's very difficult for nursing homes to choose where they can put their precious financial resources, and tough choices will have to be made if this policy is enacted and the funding does not follow. I would stand for any questions, and thank you for allowing me to comment.
So you're totally in favor of this as long as there's $1 million, but if there isn't $1 million, you're opposed to it.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, yes. And I would just also make note that for the other provider groups that had concerns, they were either, for the most part, they were carved out of the bill rather than given an extension implementation timeline. One of the suggestions in the letter was that if the appropriation was not available at this time, that perhaps we would encourage you to tie the compliance or the effective date for nursing facilities to the availability of appropriate funds to cover the mandate. I should also note that the financial penalty for providers who are unable to comply, regardless of the reasons, are quite severe.
How would you suggest we do that?
Right now, I believe the effective date is 2012. Certainly, I would hope that another fund, as Ms. Mortrude had pointed out, there are some options. Given time to identify those options, that we might be able to tie compliance for nursing facilities to the identification and appropriation of those funds.
I'm surprised we don't know this.
Why are we having trouble figuring out what other funds are available and what options there are to possibly fund this? Do we know that?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, when we started to do some of our research, we've looked at other states that have done this, and there are a number of states that have gone forward, and they have many different ways that they finance it through no interest or low interest free loans. But as we did more of our research, every department we went to said, go talk to so-and-so, they've got money and they'll help you out. And then we went to that department and they pointed their finger to the next one. And so we did what we could with the time being and hope that we can work on it some more, because we know that there are some other sources out there that could help.
Like foundations or something like that? Is that
mm-hmm.
a thing?
Yeah.
And you just haven't had time to approach anybody, is that it?
No. Our health and safety expert has at the Minnesota Nurses Association, Betty Shogren, did testify in some of the hearings, and she has a very good relationship with a lot of the distributors, and she's interested in working with them over the summer on finding out if there's deferred payments, you know, other options with them, and they're very interested in having some talks and negotiations to figure that out. Because as soon as they purchase the equipment, we know that they'll see a reduction in work comp injuries and patient safety will be better. So we're just as excited and interested in finding a solution to finding the money so that they can purchase the equipment.
And you guys are more concerned. You're concerned about like nursing homes that might not be able to afford. You're concerned about like nursing homes that might not be able to afford the equipment.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Samarja, is that right? You're kind of in a catch-22. Number one, you would reduce your work comp costs appreciably, because I know it's very, very high, especially with back injuries. If you had the ability to pay for your part of this equipment, and yet you can't afford to pay anything because the seven nursing homes in my district are in six-figure red ink. And most of the hospitals in Greater Minnesota are somewhat similar. Is there any way we can just give them grants out of this $1 million and make it at least him an RFP?
We can change the language any way you want.
I just don't know how they can afford it. They're kind of in a catch-22, Mr. Chairman. Number one, they would save an appreciable amount of money if they could eliminate their high work comp costs. Number two, they can't afford to participate in the cost, so matching doesn't make sense. So the only thing there is grants.
You get a line to the governor? Because what they're worried about is that he's going to veto the $1 million.
Well, it's a concern of mine also. It's on my list. But, you know, there's no way they can participate in it in any way unless they aren't needy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe a Senate study is better.
Mr. Chair. Sorry to walk in on the middle of this, but Mr. Marsha, did you say that you oppose the workers' comp money being used for the
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rivavina, no, we're not opposed to the funding source. What we are concerned about is the elimination, either through this fine committee's debate or through any action by the governor, that the funding source would be unacceptable and that the appropriation would not be available. We support the $1 million, and we thank the House for including that in their package. And we do support the goals of the Safe Patient Handling Act, which was the main point at the beginning of my testimony.
Mr.
Chairman, Samarja, will you clarify further for Representative Rukavina? Senator Tomasoni said, so you're for this, except you don't want it to be paid for out of the workers' comp fund. And I heard you say that's correct.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I apologize if my statements were not clear. We have no concerns, neither the Minnesota Health and Housing Alliance or care providers, as to the source of the funds. Our concern is merely that the funds continue to remain acceptable to the committee and also to the governor's office. I think we heard a little earlier of the gentleman that spoke just before me that the governor's office does, in fact, have some concerns with that fund and its use here with this grant program. We do not have that same concern.
Thank you for that clarification.
Well, we funded this in the Senate through the one-time appropriation. It was another, so it was general fund money. It wasn't out of the workers' comp fund. So.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Carina,
I think the reason we did it is we felt that this whole program was geared towards injuries and substantial injuries occurring in both patient handling in the hospitals and in the nursing home. And what better place to get it from? I mean, workers' comp fund basically funds most of the Department of Labor and Industry anyway. And then shifts it on to, you know, wherever they used to get some general fund money. So we just thought it made sense to use that money for the purpose it was intended to. And if we can cut down on injuries, which are very, you know, I mean, this whole nursing issue and the injuries that are back injuries and that especially that are caused because of patient handling, I mean, this to me makes a lot of sense, but I suppose, you know, where's Mr. Rakowski?
Yeah, where's Mr. Rakowski? Why don't you come back up? You're going to be up here in a little while again anyway, so. Maybe what you should tell us is why you're concerned about where the $1 million comes from.
Mr. Chairman, I'm speaking, actually it isn't just the department's position, it was the Work Comp Advisory Council. The nurses were good enough at our suggestion to meet with the council, and they did, and the council voted no against this appropriation. Mr. Gunther was there, Mr. Hickey's in the audience, he was there as well. And I believe the reason for the council, as you know, the makeup of the council is labor and management, is because of the precedence it would set. I mean, any other occupational group then could come and seek the same kind of funding relief that the nurses are. Again, I've told people publicly and privately we're sympathetic towards the program, but I also wanted to say to the other members of the committee, just to reiterate, we do have a safety hazardous grant program that's been in existence now. The money comes from fines that are levied against employers who do not carry work comp. That's the source of the funds, and I believe over the last couple of years we've given out about $300,000 in these grants. They are matching grants. And about 15% of that total amount has gone to the purchases of these lift machines that we're discussing tonight. So we do have a program in place. I know $300,000 doesn't seem like a lot, but that's the source of the money. It's the fines imposed on employers that who do not currently carry work comp funds. So that's how we pay for it now. But I think, again, it's the precedence it would set, and
It was a decision made by the advisory council.
It's a bad precedent to have a policy that would reduce workers' comp rate.
Well, I would defer to Mr. Gunther, that was on the advisory council, and Mr. Hickey, who's been on the council for a long time.
I must have a white flag on my back, Mr. Chairman, a target for everyone. Is it fair to reduce the work comp for one group at the expense of another? And that's kind of where it gets down to. Is it fair to give nursing homes and hospitals a break and charge grocers, might as well throw that in, more? And I don't think it is. I don't think we should pick winners and losers like that. We should pick winners and winners, and that's what I'm trying to figure out a way to do. Because I certainly understand the problem fully. Mm-hmm. If we can get this equipment to the right places, we can lower work comp. And I used to be a master at trying to do that in my business. Maybe I should give seminars. I'd make more than I am now, wouldn't I? But anyway, I think we're trying to figure out a way to do that. And that's why I defer maybe to the... I think the Senate had a position for a study. Is that correct?
Well, we also have language, though.
I like the study part.
Well, I think we both want to do the language. It's a matter of where we get the funding from. And I know you like the funding part also, because you want to give them grants.
I prefer that, because they can't afford matching.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any further discussion on this? Senator Murphy.
Just one more question from Mr. Rutkowski. The $300,000 that you get from fines, how is it determined who will get those grants? How did they apply?
My understanding is it's just whoever decides to apply for the grant, Madam Chair. I'm sure there's other rules promulgated to determine if they're eligible or not, but I asked that question of the program director. I don't think it's anything other than just put your matching dollars on the table and we'll come out there and do work.
They have matching dollars.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair?
Mr.
Rakowski, if I recall correctly, years ago, didn't Representative Begich do a workers' comp program for loggers out of the special comp
fund? Mr. Chairman, to Representative Rukavina, the log safe program you're referring to is an assessment on every cord of wood that is sent to the mills, and then that's the financing mechanism. Actually, when we met with the nurses earlier this year, we threw that idea out at them, but of course I don't think the nursing home, as Representative Gunther put it, if we're going to put some kind of excise tax on nursing homes that are already operating in the red, that's not a viable option, sir. But you're right. The Log Safe program has been a big success, and I wish we could have replicated it here, but because of the financial situation many of these rural nursing homes find themselves in, I don't think it's a viable option.
Maybe we could do an assessment on every nursing home and hospital employee and then pay it out of the workers' comp.
Who does that?
Representative Gunther.
I think I just came up with a very good inspiration. For one ten-thousandth of a percent of what Health and Human Services spend, we can take care of this problem. One ten-thousandth of a percent.
So are you going to be telling Linda Berglund and Tom Huntley this?
I was counting on you talking to Senator Berglund. I'll talk to Representative
Huntley. I'm getting along. Tom,
I think it's very appropriate for it to come out of there. They fund nursing homes and rural hospitals and other hospitals. I think that's the appropriate place to come instead of causing pain for one business to help another business out.
Now, did I understand that the effective date on this is 2012?
For those that have hardship, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And the other date is 2011.
And they would
be full implementation.
And they would be the ones that would need this money, right? The ones that have hard checks. Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, Mr. Rakowski referred to the other grant program, and we had quite a few talks with the department on how that might work, and we did try to work through that. That grant program, from what I understand, if I am recalling correctly, was cut a few years ago quite drastically, and what we found out is that their money was cut, but their applicants doubled. And so they were finding that they were unable to give out very much money at all, and that the max amount of grant was, I think, $10,000. That's why we increased it to $40,000 at least, and then those with hardship, you know, could waive the matching as well. So we tried to meet and accommodate some of those needs.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay, I think we'll probably figure this out within the next couple of days, okay?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Rakowski, do you have something else to talk to us about here?
Oh, I believe I'm supposed to talk about prevailing wage.
Yep.
What section is in?
Topic near and dear to my heart, Mr. Chairman, ever since I learned that the Attorney General applied prevailing wage to the Jobs Youth Program 3 years ago. Ever since then, I've been learning more and more about the program. The issue about enforcement has come to the department's attention countless times in the last, frankly, 30 years when prevailing wage was adopted in Minnesota, adopting the Wisconsin model, I might add, which has changed since then. But right now we're talking about the enforcement language that is in the House bill. And to keep things brief, I'll just say that our Director of Labor Standards has worked extremely closely with Mr. Ruth Devine and Mr. Mullery, and as well as numerous representatives of trade unions. So the language you see in the House bill is the agreed upon language by those parties. And tomorrow I'd like to get in the hands of Mr. Rukavina a slight wording change or an amendment. It's very slight. Does have kind of significant policy impacts, however, as it relates to payroll reporting. But we don't have that ready tonight, so.
So everything's agreed to that's in the House side?
That's correct.
And are you hoping that Representative Rukavina agrees with your amendment tomorrow, or is this something that's not controversial?
Actually,
I think
we met with him one morning on that topic.
Okay.
Chair, Mr. Rakowski and Ms. Wade have been very helpful on this issue, and doesn't make up for how he's been imposing us on the safe patient handling. But in any event, he's been very, and I think we did have some language that Mr. Gelman just showed me, which we only have one copy, so we'll get it for the committee tomorrow.
Okay. You actually did a pretty good job on this. This I think there was some really good cooperation on this, and I think I'm pretty happy with it, and I know the people that I've worked with are pretty content with it also. So, and when we get done here, the Dolly should have the ability to do the enforcement on all the prevailing wage with the exception of MnDOT. Is that correct?
That is correct. If I may add, my director, Roslyn Wade, did email me and Mr. Rukavina this afternoon. So might as well complete the topic discussion here. We also prefer the financing within the House bill. It's just a little bit more resources that we'll need in order to be successful with the enforcement, and as well as the education and outreach. And for members, I may add, the governor has been following this issue, especially from the aid community's perspective the last couple of years. And in the governor's budget, we did have, I think, $200,000, $250,000 for outreach and education for the contracting industry to provide us with more surveys. As you know, the surveys system in some counties just does not provide enough data to
in our opinion, to give you a good prevailing wage number. So we want more participation by the contractors out there, and we'll be going out this summer, as I've told some of you, to describe the new changes in the law should this pass, as well as getting them up to speed on the survey and everything else.
And go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Bukowski, the difference in the House and Senate language would be that 60 some odd thousand dollars that I gave you, that we said you'd need to do some initial outreach?
That's part of it, but Mr. Soderberg also, I believe it's $300,000 for the base, and then 60 plus that, so we'd prefer that financing option, please.
So the Senate language, Mr. Chair, Mr. Rakowski, doesn't include that new money for the staff in that?
I believe the Senate number was $250,000, which included both enforcement and education and outreach. So your number is a little bigger. And as we think more and more about this with the amount of meetings we're going to need to have, there's some your number just adds up better for us.
Well, maybe, Mr. Chair, members, we could use work the comp money for that, and then we could do this.
Mr. Chair, our numbers.
Senator Murphy.
Our numbers were before we got the new target.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we were thinking that the two people that you had for education could also do enforcement, so we were thinking we'd give you another half, that'd give you two and a half there. And so I think you got four people out of them, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sparks.
To that point, does the House have some language dealing with enforcement in their position?
Yeah, we've got quite a bit of language, and but we don't have the language on the wage, on submission of wages to the Department of Labor and Industry. Otherwise, I think all the other language we have in there has been agreed upon by Dolly and the House.
Mr. Chair, because I know Senator Metzen, that was a key part of the meeting we had in your committee and Senator Thomas only too. I think that's where some of the funding came. I know the enforcement was a very important provision that was included in the Senate's language.
Yeah, this is one of those that I had to take to the Judiciary Committee after I went through finance, remember? Okay, anyway. Any further discussion here? Because it looks like we're got everything ready to go here, and, except for that one little thing we're going to do tomorrow. Okay, thank you very much. Sherman? From Deed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Sherman. I'm with Deed and Rehabilitation Services Unit. And Mr. O'Rourke asked me to testify on language that's on page R20. In the Senate language, lines 8.7 to 8.21. This language talks about matching federal vocational rehabilitation, well, federal dollars with state independent living dollars. And we, just after this language was addressed, after it moved into the Senate finance bill, the federal government, after about a 7 or 8 month delay, sent us a letter that basically said that what is being proposed is not workable. We have worked with the Centers for Independent Living and believe we have an alternate use from some dollars that would be workable at levels that are acceptable to the leadership of the Minnesota Association for Centers for Independent Living. Committee staff at this point is working on language to that effect, and I believe we'll have it available tomorrow.
Yep. Okay. That's good to hear. Good job. Okay, so that's another thing we'll have to do tomorrow. Any other questions? It sounds like, as long as that's the case, that's fine. Is there anybody else that needs to testify? Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that needs to testify on anything that would like to talk to us tonight? Because now might be the time to get your 2 cents in here if you are concerned about anything in the bill. Senator Metzen, you know what page that thing of yours is that we did the 50% on?
I think maybe you're referring, Mr. Chairman,
R36?
R21, the youth...
R36.
Redevelopment fund question is on page R36, dealing with a percent that goes to the metro or non-metro area. Top of page 36.
The language is exactly the same on this, except for the percentages. The House percentage is 25%, and the Senate percent is 50%, and I think Senator...
I gave a explanation earlier tonight, or whatever day it was.
And you want to move the Senate language, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And I think it's agreed upon by everybody that that's okay if it's okay with you guys.
I don't think it's agreed upon yet.
Well, you should. This is better language, actually.
It's the same language except 50% instead of 25%, Mr. Chair.
That's exactly right. That's why it's better, because it's half and half instead of 25-75.
Yeah.
So everybody gets treated better this day.
Mr. Chair, I thought we were being fair bringing it on board because right now it's zero.
I know, but
we weren't listening earlier, I guess.
I was listening. I don't want to hear. I just didn't hear. Senator Metzen. And I remind you that we didn't vote for Jesse Ventura where I came from, but you guys did, so you got what you deserved.
Look at that iron grade here for the ball fields at Chisholm. So.
We used our own money for that. If South St. Paul wants to use their money for redevelopment, that's I'll vote for that. I'll second it.
I'll make a motion.
All right. Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, since I have a little institutional knowledge, this was 50-50 until Representative Dorman and Senator Langseth decided that Greater Minnesota needed a little push, and they changed it. But it was all right, and Representative Clark can verify this. It was always 50-50, and if anything at a date specific was left over from one or the other, it was available to both. Now, that's the way the language was for 4 years.
And that's what this is back to.
And Representative Rocavina is very right. Representative Dorman decided that Greater Minnesota had a bigger need for it than the metro.
I'll get back into this here in a minute. I don't think that's correct, Mr. Chairman. I explained it earlier. It was a suggestion from Governor Ventura. What was going on is he said, we'll get the 50% from somewhere else, meaning the Metro Council. And they were to go to work on it and get the 50% there, and it never happened. It never happened. That's where that money was supposed to come from. It wasn't Dorman or anything else. They might have agreed to it. But it wasn't because of the need. The money is raised equally throughout the state. There's no reason anybody should get 10% or 90% or 20% or 80%. It should be 50-50. And that's how it happened, because they thought the Metro Council would get the money.
Aren't you agreeing?
I think I just said that.
He agreed with you.
I think I did the same. Are you agreed with me?
Yes.
Why are you?
We're all right.
Just please be so much. You were talking about Dorman and all this other stuff. Why the girls should get more, and I guess I missed something. But if you agree with me, discussion is closed.
We're buying breakfast tomorrow.
Are you paying for breakfast?
Tomorrow?
All right.
At this point, Chairman Rukavina agreed with Senator Metzen as well. In my 26-13, we just graduated in over a couple more years. And,
yeah, I agree with you too, Representative. That's the right. Thank you, Representative. Senator Metz, I just took a little more time to get there. It was deliberative, you know.
You know,
well, I miss Gunther's, my good friend, and I miss where he was going. I've been wrong before.
So,
thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the House position gets the 50% too. It's just those eight entities that have grown accustomed to this funding will be able to have two more years to get weaned off of it.
So we're supposed to keep the unfair for a couple more years.
Well, Mr. Chair, what's the dollar figures on this?
$2,180,000.
Is it both? I have a recollection that we might have given a little more money than the Senate.
$180,000. You want that part of it?
Don't give it up.
Is that all the difference is? Is $180,000? Where's it showing?
Between the two bills.
I don't know.
I thought it was quite a bit more than that.
Well, we had $2 million in the one-time one. Right.
And I think we've got 2 points.
And you got $2,108,000.
218. I agree with Gunther.
I'm going.
Oh, whatever.
Do you like the House position?
No, we don't like the House position.
I'm not talking to you, Mahoney.
What are those? What is this language cross-reference itself?
I'm...
Well...
Oh, but... We got this, and then we got this. This one's the...
Well, Mr. Chair... Mr. Chair...
Yeah.
Can we wait on this while we talk about the money issue that goes with it, too?
Absolutely.
And I was expecting, so, Senator Metzen, where's the other half of your proposal? Like, you get something and then the House gets something. Is there another half? Did you forget? Did you forget the other half of your proposal?
I'm at loss for words because I've been trying to be cool here. I won't go back to all the air raid stuff. We've been very fair this evening. And this is also a fairness issue, and that's all I'm going to say.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Metzen, but this is general fund money, and it's ongoing, I believe, in our...
I've got tonight on this issue. That's right.
Yeah, we'll let this go, but just somebody clarify this for me, because we've got two different sets of language in the House, and... One says something about 75%, and one says something about 25%. Can somebody help me on this?
What page is
it on? On page R35, what Representative Moe referenced had something about a delay for a couple of years. And then at the bottom of R35, there's some more language about what I thought Senator Metzen was referring to as a part 25% goes to. Anita, do you have any idea about that? Oh, you weren't paying attention? Take a look at R35. And up on top, there's some reference to...
27.14.
Actually, I'm thinking about 26-13.
Mr. Chair, I think that's the redevelopment. That's the cleanup grant. That's the cleanup funds.
No, Mr. Chair, that's the Greater Minnesota Redevelopment Account. But what we've been trying to figure out here is that the statutory language doesn't have the extra carve-out for rural Minnesota that we can see. So the question is, was that a rider in the previous biennium's appropriation?
Oh, boy.
Mr. Soderbergh wants to weigh in.
Go ahead, Mr. Soderbergh.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if my memory serves me correct, at one time it was called the redevelopment account. Mm-hmm. Then it became the Greater Minnesota Redevelopment Account. Mm-hmm. That meaning anywhere outside the seven-county metro area was a redevelopment account exclusively. What this bill, the House language, would do is phase it back to the way it used to be, a 50-50. And it would do it over in increments of at least 75% for the next 2 years, and then in 2010 and beyond, it would be 50-50. I think what the next one does makes a further clarification that says that at least 25% of the money provided as grants must be made for sites located outside of the metropolitan area. And that's saying that I think the commissioner has discretion, and if there isn't enough money spent in either of the 50-50 pots, then he can move. Then the department has the authority to move money back and forth between.
Okay, so at least 75% must be available for grants in Greater Minnesota, but at least 25% must be for grants in Minnesota.
I think that's after after effect. I don't know. I'm just telling you what
I'm trying to figure out which one takes precedence here, or if I'm not understanding, and they're both different. Mr. Jamboy, can you help us on this?
Well, I hope so, Mr. Chair.
Did you write this?
Well, long ago and far away, I had a hand in writing it. There are other people in the room that have as well. Again, Mr. Chair and members, my name is Louis Jamboy. I'm with Metro Cities. On the bottom of R35, on the House side, on lines 27.9 to the top line, or through 27.15, is the original language that the Department of Employment and Economic Development requested for the redevelopment program, to take the Greater Minnesota Redevelopment Program that Mr. Soderbergh was talking about and make it a metro and Greater Minnesota program again. That language is identical language to the redevelopment program language that was passed in the original program in 1998. So the House version of on 27.9 through 27.15 is the original deed redevelopment language. I believe that language was left on the House side, and I believe Representative Rukavina added the language on page R35, lines 26.13 through 26.16. Those languages, I believe, are conflicting. They're really talking about the same thing. They're two ways to skin the same cat. On R35, on the Senate side, lines 33.7 through on R36, 33.13, that's the language that everyone had seemed to have worked out for splitting the redevelopment statute money 50% metro area and 50% Greater Minnesota. So I believe the two languages on the House side are conflicting, and the Senate language is the language that sort of makes it clear.
So, Mr. Chair.
Mahoney.
The Senate language in this rare instance for a House member actually makes sense.
Yes. Well, that's what Senator Metzen was trying to say.
I'm just a man of few words, Senator Metzen.
You get good words, though, I'll tell you that.
Well, if you still want to wait until we talk about the money later on, we can act on this tomorrow. But I think we understand now that we want to do what's on the Senate side.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would have no problem with thinking about it. I did
I have to admit I shouldn't have left the language on 27.15 in here. It must have been a weak moment on my part to try to give the governor something that he had requested, and inadvertently then it screws up my language. So the intention of my language is still at the top of the page, which is to phase in the fairness, like you guys always do.
Representative Rukavina, two wrongs don't make a right.
Phasing in fairness is correct.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll look at the money later on, and then we'll do the Senate language tomorrow.
But, Mr. Chair, I will say, for the record, I'm going to probably go along with Senator Metzen, because I just don't want to hear him whining again tomorrow.
Well, let's do this then. Let's move Senator Metzen's language right now, and then we'll do the money tomorrow, and that way everybody will be happy. Oh, that's all.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Senate language on page
R35.
Lines
33.7.
Section 40, starting at 32.18.
Wait. We want.
Through 33.13.
Do we need Section 39 also? I guess we need Section 39 to go with that also, on the Senate side. So it would be Section 39 and Section 40. Okay.
Well, I move Section 40.
Okay. We'll take that for now. All right. Representative Murphy moves Section 40 be adopted on the Senate side. On page R35, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's adopted.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I move adoption of Section 39 from lines 32.8 to 32.17. Senate language.
Representative Murphy moves the Senate language in Section 39, page R35. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Does anybody else have anything they need to talk about right now?
I do, but I'm not doing very well. So
well, okay.
Tomorrow.
You did really good just now. What do you mean? You got everything you wanted.
I think you're on a roll. Senator, if you got on a roll, you should probably...
If you got something...
I was thinking on R15 on this RISE program stuff, this is a training of... the hard to train individuals, and the payback is like about 5 to 1, and we catch these kids up front, and
R15,
it's 5.3 to 5.7 on the Senate side. I think the House has some money in there too.
Senator Metzen, if you can hold off on this is a money issue that we're trying to figure out exactly what to do with this yet. I don't know that we're ready to act on it just yet.
Well, it's an awareness issue.
That's a very good one, then. We're aware of it. I'll mark your name down here.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Senator Mahoney.
If I could just add to Senator Metzen's comments that I did some checking on this, and the dollar figures per client are absolutely wonderful, and I certainly hope when we get the chance to address it tomorrow, we address it in an as affirmative way as we possibly can.
Okay. Does anybody else need to tell us anything from the audience that they're concerned about as far as language is concerned? I think we're doing a pretty good job of ironing out any controversial policy that's in here. It sounds like people are getting together pretty nicely. So, Representative Rukavina?
Before we were trying to break up, I was thinking since Senator Metzen got one of his things, because maybe I could move that packing house language in. Even up on that, yes. Senator Metzen.
Yes, there's no Representative Rukavina.
Any comments, Senator Metzen, on that?
Go Alan. Come on, are you just starting to like you? Don't. Okay.
Just keep smiling.
I'm just smiling.
Representative Murphy, I don't know if you got a plan for tomorrow yet, or. In time, because I'm about to adjourn here, so I'm just wondering if you have thought about a time for tomorrow, or will you make that announcement later?
I expect that I will have to come after session, going to session at 10.
Okay, so if there's no further comments and nobody else wants to testify on anything, we'll see you tomorrow. Meeting adjourned.